This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. Audible.com has over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. To start your trial today, go to audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Alfred Conaway, Nate Milton, and Marcus Vanderberg. So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time. I am the Godfather, Nate Milton, joined as always by Big Nasty Alfred Cunningham and Marcus Vanderberg. What's going on, fellas?
Hey, Nate.
Hey, Nathan.
Wow. It's like we starting off like this already.
It's the hot tag. Yeah.
Okay. But I'm not even going to let that derail me influence my positivity this week, because we got a lot of stuff to talk about. Of course, the big fight from over the weekend. Of course, a lot of football on the schedule. We got TJ McClune in the house a little bit later on. So it's going to be a very good show. And we always deliver to the people. Unlike Johnny Football, we talk the talk and we walk the walk.
Here we go. Johnny Football delivered for himself. The defense didn't deliver.
What do you play to win? What do you play to do, Marcus? You play to win the game.
You
play to win the game, but at the same time, when you're setting records that Nick Saban hasn't seen before, you have to cut the kid some slack.
I mean, he played a good game, but by the same token, to whom much is given, much is expected. And Johnny Football, you know, for all the hype, for all the bravado, for all the Johnny Cam, you know, that was out of his control in terms of ESPN focusing, dedicating the camera specifically to one player.
CBS, you don't want to slander the mothership.
It was CBS?
Yeah, it was CBS.
Okay. SEC on CBS. All right. So yeah, we'll spare Brent Musburger and the good people for ESPN ABC. But you know, all the hype, all the bravado, and Johnny, He had some very amazing plays in the game, but he also made some boneheaded mistakes. The one interception was kind of fluky, but the other one was just a bad pass in the end zone. And, you know, if you're going to get the praise, if you're going to get the spotlight, I think you got to be able to take the criticism. And, you know, Johnny has to shoulder some of the blame for that loss.
I think he was very upfront and, to be honest, surprisingly mature in defeat. There really isn't any extracurricular story from Johnny Manziel. He just got his butt whooped. And I know they staged a comeback, but for a long time in that game, it was just Alabama outclassing Texas A&M. They reeled off, what, 35 unanswered points? And yes, they had a comeback at the end in garbage time, but I just felt like I was watching one team that was out of another team's league in that game.
Yeah, I was very impressed by A.J. McCarron. He was someone who I never considered an elite quarterback, but the way he handled that offense after trailing 14-0 was really impressive. He put up good numbers as well, 20 of 29 for 334 yards and 4 touchdowns. And T.J. Yeldon as well. He's, you know, he was sort of the guy that people forgot about last year behind Eddie Lacy, but, you know, he has proven that he's an elite college football running back. So, yeah, I mean, hats off to Alabama. As for Manziel, yeah, that one play in the end zone where he tossed it up there, he probably should be tossing it to Mike Evans, which was a brutal interception for him. But I was impressed by Manziel. I'm more impressed by his passing game. We saw last year that he could run and scramble, but he seems to be more comfortable in the pocket, more comfortable trying to make passes downfield. And I think ultimately that'll help him in the next level at the NFL.
Yeah, I think, you know, we saw a much more mature Johnny Manziel, both after the game, like Alfred mentioned, but also, you know, in the course of the game, you know, and yeah, I give him credit for that. But by the same token, like you mentioned, man, Alabama is legit. They're the real deal. And I hate that, because I hate Nick Saban almost as much as I hate anybody walking the face of planet Earth. I know that's Alfred's man crush over there, the greatest coach of all time.
A little bit.
But, you know, Alabama is legit. And I think, you know, maybe LSU, you know, maybe there's some upsets waiting out there. But if they handle their business, if they take care of business, I don't see anybody beating Alabama.
Clearly, and you just have to put this game in perspective, this was Alabama and Nick Saban, the great Nick Saban, in a revenge game with 2 weeks to prepare.
No, they don't say the R word this week, Albert. They don't say the R word.
Oh, yeah, it's not revenge, but that's bullshit. The fact that they're saying it's not revenge, I have it on good authority that in their locker rooms they had the game playing from last season when Johnny Manziel beat him. And they had play after play after play of Johnny Manziel making Alabama's defense look silly. And that has gotten them worked up to the point where this game was somewhat of a must-win for Alabama. This is very early, a very early test in their season. And if they would have lost this, I don't know if they could have mentally recovered.
That game plan you mentioned, it backfired because he made them even look sillier this time. Manziel looked better Saturday than he did last year. The big difference,
I think, they made themselves look silly. I think it was a lot of communication problems with the defense, and I don't think it was anything that Manziel was doing himself. I think it was just this. They were a little discombobulated once the defense started leaking.
You mentioned that Alabama schedule. It's pretty weak from here on out. They get home for Ole Miss, home for LSU, but you know, in between there, we're talking about the cupcakes of the SEC, including Kentucky, Arkansas, and Tennessee. And then my favorite, you have two games that are really questionable for Alabama's schedule. One is Georgia State at home, and the last one, November 23rd, is Chattanooga. So, yeah, I don't see anyone taking down Alabama. not mighty Chattanooga or the Georgia State Bulldogs or whatever their mascot is.
Why are you hating on the Chattanooga Mocs? They like moccasins. They're snakes. They come out there and surprise you laying in the weeds.
Speaking of surprise, hey, we can't just sit here and assume that by looking at somebody's schedule, oh, they're just going to run the table, because Michigan almost pulled a Michigan again with that scare against Akron. And who knows, maybe there's going to be a little bit of a look ahead. They're very smart of Alabama to have an open date before the LSU Tigers, but you never knew. Maybe when they're playing Tennessee, they'll have another mind. Okay, we'll just get past this, and then we'll prepare for LSU, and they could slip up.
Did you see Tennessee against Oregon this weekend?
Yeah,
they could slip up. Akron has won one game in the past 3 years.
That's Michigan.
It's every given Saturday. It's every given Saturday.
That's Michigan. Talking about Alabama here.
Any team can lose any game on any given Saturday, and everybody's going to be shocked. But you got to look at emotional values here, especially with college kids. You never know. They're not the same person from week to week. These aren't professionals. Maybe A.J. McCarron will break up with Catherine Webb one of these days, and he just won't be the same guy. You never know with these college kids.
They're getting paid like professionals at Alabama.
Maybe they are,
as
allegedly.
As you found out last week. Oh, no, allegedly about that. We have the evidence. They're getting paid, but you're right, but I just don't see it. I think, you know, Saban is...
Of course, nobody sees it. Nobody sees it, but it can happen. It can absolutely happen.
You know, exactly. Like I was saying, you know, Oregon looked very good over the weekend. You know, Michigan, they survived the scare. I mean, Notre Dame, you talk about Texas A&M. If they run the table, are they back in the conversation in terms of national championship? Do you see any of these teams kind of stepping up and challenging in Alabama, Marcus?
I think Oregon has the best shot of challenging Bama. They have a couple of tough games versus UCLA and Stanford that are back-to-back, but if they can get by those two, I think they are the legit contender for Alabama, and I think based on the way the Tide defense looked against Texas A&M, that the Oregon offense can cause them some trouble.
Well, a lot of people are impressed with Oregon's offense, myself included, and I think they're a great regular season offense. But we've seen time and time again, whenever an elite team has time to prepare for Oregon, they're not the same team. It's a very difficult offense to prepare for if you're going from 1 week to the next, and they're already conditioned, and they're ready to run up and down that field. Yeah, sure. But we saw it with LSU. We saw it with Auburn. We even saw it with Cal 1 week when they had a couple weeks to prepare for Oregon that – they've scored 19 points here, 27 points here, after scoring 30, 40 points at will. So I do think that Oregon will end up in the national title game. I do not think they're going to be the same team that we're seeing that can score 60 points in any given Saturday.
I see what you're saying. Some teams, though, that I'm kind of curious about, just kind of maybe dark horses, if you will. If you talk about Ohio State, or you talk about Clemson, or maybe even Stanford, like Marcus was saying, you know, if that big game between Stanford and Oregon, if Stanford could pull that one out, you know, where do you see them in terms of, you know, the top contenders?
Stanford, they sort of struggled over the weekend against Army. I'm not really sold yet on Stanford and what they can do this year, so I still need to see more of them. They get Arizona State next week, so that should be a good test for them. They're now ranked in the top 25, so I just need to wait and see on Stanford.
But yeah,
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say I agree with you, Marcus. Stanford has not looked impressive to me at all this season, and Arizona State is way better than anybody's giving them credit for, and now they're just charted to see, especially on the national stage. Now, I don't like the circumstances in which they came about being a ranked team, but still, they're a very, very good team.
And as much as this pains me to say, UCLA, mighty impressive to come back the way they did in Nebraska over the weekend, especially given the circumstances of one of their teammates tragically dying last week. A very impressive win, but at the same time, they have a murderous schedule coming up in October. They have to go to at Stanford and at Oregon in back-to-back weeks, so I doubt they survive both of those games, but for some reason, if UCLA finds a way to upset both Stanford and Oregon on the road, then I think we're talking about the Bruins as well.
And is Brett Hundley a Heisman frontrunner if they do?
I think he has to be, yeah.
He has to be.
No love for USC this week, Marcus?
The Trojans finally looked like they should be. but it was also Boston College, so yeah. I don't know how much to read into that. But the USC defense is mighty impressive. It's much better than the offense, so we'll see. Utah State is next week, and that should be an interesting game for them. Chucky Keaton is actually a really talented quarterback, and we'll see how good the USC defense actually is against a legit team.
I mean, I've never bought a piece of USC paraphernalia or clothing, but I would completely spend $15, $20, $25 for a Kip and Don't Know t-shirt. Kip and Don't Know. So let's leave college football right there. We'll pick it up a little bit later with our TJ McClune. Let's talk about the other big football game over the weekend with a lot of hype behind it, a lot of fanfare behind it. The Manning Bowl 3, perhaps the last time we'll see Peyton and Eli play against one another unless the Giants miraculously make it to the Super Bowl. But what did you think about that game and also any of the other big games over the weekend with the NFL, Marcus?
It was a bit of a letdown. That game was not close at all. A lot of turnovers again for Eli Manning. You know, Peyton Manning leads the league in touchdowns, and Eli leads the league in interceptions, so that's not a good trend. It was just a game that was on in the office for me. And even the Seattle 49ers game was a bit of a letdown as well. I was impressed by, you know, Seattle's defense, and they continue to be a terror at home, and a team that will need home field advantage to have any shot, I think, at the Super Bowl, but you never know.
You think so?
I think if they have home field advantage all the way through, I think you can book it. But if they have to go out on the road, I don't know.
I just think this team is a team that's built to play on the road. I completely understand what you're saying, Marcus. It would be huge, just given how good their home field advantage is, to have a home field advantage. But the way they play defense, that personnel, how deep they are, I think the Seattle Seahawks, it's like we saw them pretty much win in Atlanta without winning. You know, it was so close to how they almost beat the Falcons. That's the type of team that I see playing, you know, anywhere. In the Georgia Dome is no joke.
Yeah, and one last thing, the Redskins now 0-2. And Robert Griffin III, another slow start. He's becoming the king of fantasy garbage points. just like last Monday night, he decided to start, you know, completing passes at the end of the game. So the Redskins are in a tough spot. They go back home to host Detroit now, and you know, it's a must-win situation. If they fall 0-3 in the season, I think, you know, the Shanahan haters will start to come out. And, you know, we've already seen some comments on Twitter. I saw some yesterday about people trying to blame this on RG3 and maybe Kirk Cousins should be starting, which is ludicrous. But it doesn't take long for the fans to turn on you.
Yeah, and the NFC East it's a down year for the East. I think you got a lot of teams that are in rebuilding or at least reloading mode. We saw the Giants lose the Manning Bowl yesterday. The Eagles, heartbreaking loss to the Chargers. You know, there was so much talk in the first week about that Chip Kelly offense and getting off all those plays. And a lot of that, people forget, has to do with the Redskins' turnovers. You know, giving the ball back to the Eagles to give them those extra possessions. And the Chargers went in there yesterday, and I think they did a good job of ball control. You know, the way that you beat an up-tempo, high-powered offense is to not give them the ball. You know, Michael Vick and LeSean McCoy and DeSean Jackson, when they were on the field, they looked pretty good. But if you keep them off the field, that defense is so porous that, you know, I think Philly is going to struggle if they don't get that defense together. We saw Dallas choke away a game to Kansas City. So I think, you know, if the Redskins can get their act together and RG3 can get healthy, I think that's the bigger point and get some confidence in those legs of his, you know, it's wide open. It's anybody's division, Alfred.
A lot of people are focusing on the wrong things when it comes to the Washington Redskins. I do a column, the Spread Trader, NFL every week. I'm 57% career against the spread. And one of the things that wise guys do before they go into a season, one of the most important statistics, is turnover change. So if your turnovers, your improvement in turnovers from one year to another is high, you're one of the most inflated teams and invariable. They always, always almost come down to the pack. The Redskins led the league in turnover change last year with plus 31. That type of stat is not sustainable. They were negative 14 in 2011. They improved to plus 17 in 2012. So it's huge, huge, huge dichotomy between what the Redskins did last year and this year. So they are bound to come down. As far as the Eagles, anybody should have seen this coming because of how big of a deal they made of the Eagles winning on national television. It's a revolution, everybody was saying. And then they were a favorite against a non-conference opponent after beating a division opponent when the Redskins. So the Eagles look very inflated, especially because they've allowed 60 points in the first two games and 539 yards of total offense to the San Diego Chargers, who were traveling across three time zones. Eagles look horrible defensively.
Very true. And you mentioned, Nate, about, you know, ball control. 40 minutes and 17 seconds the Chargers held the ball yesterday compared to 19 for the Eagles. And, you know, it's impressive the 19 minutes the Eagles had the ball, they still managed to rack up 511 total yards. But that's the way to beat them is keep them off the field.
Yeah, the other thing is that, you know, when you've got an offense that can score points that quickly, your defense is going to get tired. And you've got a defense that already is average at best, and then you're going to wear them out for, you know, spending all that time, 40 minutes of the game out there playing defense. You know, it's a bad, you know, it's a very troubling situation if you're an Eagles fan, because on the one hand, you got, if you put up 33 points a game, you should win more than you lose, but that defense is going to let them down, I think, more often than not.
This Thursday night, Kansas City, Andy Reid coming back to town.
Yeah, and that'll be a very interesting game. I think, you know, especially with the momentum from coming back and beating the Cowboys, you know, Andy Reid is a guy that knows Michael Vick. He knows DeSean Jackson. He knows those players on that offense. And, you know, if there's anybody that's going to be able to crack the code and beat that Chip Kelly scheme and maybe give a repeat of what we saw this Sunday with the Chargers, it's Andy Reid.
Yeah, and that's going to be the big difference maker, is that Andy Reid has knowledge of those players and their tendencies, and when he watches film, it's going to be that much more valuable. And the difference between the Eagles and Chiefs, the Chiefs can play defense, they can hold on to the ball, the Eagles can't. I don't think the Eagles should be a favorite in this game. This is an early game that I'm targeting to maybe take the points with the Chiefs, because I know the Chiefs are underdogs.
Yeah, and I think either way, it's going to be an ugly game. We've seen now these Thursday night games are just dreadful. We learned last year that they're not fun to watch. Last Thursday wasn't, you know, it lived up to that rule, because that the Jets-Patriots game was pretty dreadful. So, you know, a short week for both teams, especially the Eagles, who might start to get, you know, tired legs by running this high-powered, high-tempoed offense. So we'll see how Thursday goes.
Yeah, it's a rare night when impact is miles better than the NFL game. And that was the case this past Thursday. So we'll talk a little TNA with TJ a little bit later. But before we end out the A block, I did want to hit on probably the biggest fight of the weekend. And Canelo thought he was the one, but he turned out he was just another one in the long line of fighters that have fallen to Floyd Money Mayweather. And the money team will pay for your services, brother Alvarez.
I thought it was I was very surprised to see each fighter's game plan. I felt like what Mayweather was doing, I felt like Alvarez was going to do, yes, which is just get jab in there, stand in the middle of the ring, yeah, jab, be very aggressive. And Alvarez seemed very apprehensive. A lot of people I was watching the fight with said, oh, yeah, he's being a thinking man's fighter. He's feeling him out. No, I just felt like Alvarez felt nervous, and he just wasn't ready for that moment. And he was way more apprehensive than I expected him to be. So hats off to Floyd Mayweather, who just seemed to have already figured out Alvarez before he even got in the ring, and that's why he's the best.
And the funny thing about, you know, Floyd's game plan on Saturday was that was Oscar's big game plan. The big blueprint from 2007, I believe, was to jab, jab, jab. And that's what Oscar was doing in that fight. And then eventually Oscar decided to fade away from that, and that's when Floyd took over. And, you know, it was a clinic. If you're someone who appreciates the sport of boxing, you would have enjoyed the fight. I had some buddies over, and I know some people were expecting a more exciting fight, but I felt it was exciting just to see how, you know, Floyd was such an assassin in the ring, and how he just, you know, he cut Canelo off. And yeah, he was, you know, Canelo was throwing these punches, but if you're watching closely, they weren't landing. You know, he was blocking every single punch that he was getting off. So it was an excellent fight to watch for a boxing fan. Danny Garcia, Lucas Matisse didn't disappoint either. I was surprised Garcia won. Garcia really impressed me. I was under the impression that Lucas would win and he would knock him out, but and very impressive.
Well, he was trying.
He tried. Trust me. Yeah. Danny has a tough chin. Which has already led to some talk about maybe Garcia Mayweather in May.
Don't do it, Danny. Don't do it.
I don't know if I want to see that fight. I think Garcia should go a different route, maybe fight Canelo or someone else before he steps up to Floyd. So I'm still holding hope for Pacquiao Mayweather. So,
to me, the most telling thing about it was there was not maybe one round. There was maybe one round in the entire fight where you felt Canelo did better in that round. But for the most part, we got a masterclass in defense, a masterclass in quickness. And Floyd not only is physically better than most fighters, even at this age, but in terms of, you know, the muscle in between his ears. You know, Floyd, for all his cockiness and the bravado and all that, Floyd delivers. And Floyd is a scientist in there. Like I said last week, you know, Floyd's a Jedi, and Canelo has never been in there with a Jedi, and we saw what happened. But to me, the bigger question coming out of this fight is, what's next? You know, is it going to be Garcia? You know, what's going on with Canelo? What happens with Austin Trout? You know, where do we see Floyd neck going, and where do we see that division going?
I think we just have to wait until after November 23rd just to see which direction he's going to go. We got the Rios Pacquiao fight. I think if Pacquiao comes off looking impressive and he wins, I think that'll automatically start the Floyd Mayweather Pacquiao buzz right there. If Pacquiao loses, then I think, you know, he's in a tough spot in order to get a huge payday, because you're talking about a lot of guys that mainstream audiences don't know. The one advantage of having Canelo Alvarez fight was he had a country behind him. The country of Mexico loves this kid. He's a hero to them. So, you know, Danny Garcia doesn't have that same kind of pull that a Canelo Alvarez has. So it'll be interesting. But he's targeting the fight in May and September. So we'll at least get two more fights next year from Floyd.
And as interesting and intriguing as Floyd Mayweather fights are, I would be more interested at this point, just in terms of a competitive fight, to see a rematch between Austin Trout and Canelo Alvarez. Because while Canelo did win a unanimous decision, anybody in boxing will tell you, any pundit will tell you, that that fight was much closer than it was scored. I talked to Austin Trout this past week in an interview, and he agrees, and he is very hungry for a rematch. He even said if Canelo loses this fight, especially if it's one-sided, which it was, that he would be even hungrier for a rematch. So I really want to see those two go back at it.
He just needs CJ Ross in his corner. He'll be awesome.
Yeah, of course. What was that? Majority decision. You saw Floyd, too. What the fuck?
And the bit talk before the fight was at the number for a draw for the fight was dropping tremendously. It started, it opened at, I think, 30-1. By the time the fight started, it was down to 8-1. So you never know. You never know with Vegas and judges and what people might have in mind. But it was quite the baffling scorecard, and once you find out that she also called the Pacquiao Bradley fight, it sort of made sense.
Yeah. Well, you know, and speaking of Pacquiao, finally to kind of close off the segment, you mentioned it. Do we see that match anytime in the near future? I'm thinking if Pacquiao wins, there's a slight chance, but if he loses, there's no chance. So I'm gonna say I put the odds at 60% that we're never going to see that fight.
I would put the odds, if Pacquiao wins, I say 75% it happens. You know,
really?
For this fight, Pacquiao's getting the drug test that was such an issue with them in the past. We're talking about a guy in Floyd who is coming off a record payday versus Canelo, $41.5 million guaranteed. We all know that he can make well over $50 million if he fights Pacquiao, I think. So I think it'll happen. I think all it takes now is an impressive Pacquiao victory. which means Pacquiao will get beat somehow, and this will be yeah, all be, this will all just be a dream.
You're saying this like it's so easy, and it would be so easy for Pacquiao to just get this victory. Pacquiao looks done. He doesn't look like the same fighter. He hasn't been the same fighter since the Bradley fight, which, yeah, obviously everybody thought he won, but then he got knocked out by Marquez, and it just, I don't see Pacquiao returning to the level of elite fighter that he once was, and that's going to be the huge difference in him getting a fight with Floyd or not. And either way, I just think we are never going to see this fight. I don't think Floyd has anything to gain from Pacquiao. I know, yeah, money, and he's got a lot of money, and he wants a big payday for a Pacquiao fight, but there has to be a lot that Pacquiao has to do to get there, and I don't think he will.
Do you think he would take it just for legacy's sake?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think that ever really mattered to Floyd Mayweather? It's like money, cars, women, and then legacy.
No, I think his legacy Mayweather, does matter to him.
I think the only legacy that matters is for him to get to like 50-0 and retire. Who he does it against, I don't think it matters as much as getting to 50-0. And no matter what you say, Floyd Mayweather is one of the greatest boxers of all time. And given how Manny Pacquiao's fallen apart, people aren't going to really hold it against him that he didn't fight Manny Pacquiao. This is one of the more impressive victories. Now the narrative is, oh, Canelo was a year too early. No, Floyd made him look bad. And Canelo Alvarez is one of those fighters that people were starting to say that Floyd is scared of and that he's the guy who can beat Floyd. Floyd went in there, fought a guy well into his prime who was one of the best, and he beat him. So I think that's much more satisfying than a Pacquiao fight would have been.
I think there'll always be talk of what if. Why didn't he fight Pacquiao? Blah, 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 blah. I think this would just silence any of that stuff, and you know, when he is ready to ride off in the sunset at 50-0 or whatever it might be, that he can always say, you know, he beat Manny Pacquiao, despite the fact that it was probably 3 or 4 years too late, he still beat him.
Yeah. So
75% go Pacquiao to win in November.
Yeah, man, because the last time we saw Pacquiao, like Alfred mentioned, though, he was taking a nap. He was gone.
Listen, Marquez was so big in that fight. He came back clean, but man, he. I'm just saying.
The views expressed by Marcus Vandenberg.
I'm just saying, Swole Patrol was out for that fight. I mean, dude was ripped. So.
Go back. Brother can't go to the gym and get some cuts.
He was eating those yams, man. He was on the yam diet. Looking like the Rock out there.
Oh, man.
Real quick, I know styles make fights in boxing, and deductive reasoning isn't really much reasoning when it comes to these types of things, but Marquez has always been a tough matchup for Manny Pacquiao, and when we saw Marquez and Mayweather, Mayweather outclassed him every single round.
Oh, you're talking about a prediction? Oh, if they were to fight, like what would happen?
Yeah, and I'm just saying that what people
Floyd would win, yeah, but...
Yeah, for sure.
Especially after those wars with Marquez, I think Pacquiao, I'm not going to say he's shot, but he's close to it.
Yeah,
I agree.
So we'll end things off right there for the A Block, but coming up next, we got some great stuff in store for you. We got a wonderful list topic. We got T.J. McClune from the Austin American Statesman in the house, and we got the always entertaining segment 4, so stick and stay, because we'll be back with more Kings of Sport right after this. We've always said the Kings of Sport was the best podcast around, but now the reviews are in and the people have spoken. Here's what you had to say about the show. This is a sports podcast for the people, by the people. There are no old guys talking about the good old days. These are brothers that are connected to what's going on now. They bring you the latest information as well as comparing current events to historical ones. If there is one sports podcast that you need to listen to, make it this one. This is a very good show with three brilliant co-hosts who keep it real. Younger guys with great minds for sports. They have differing opinions and back it up with facts and figures. Always entertaining and an enjoyable listen. I am down with the Kings.
The Kings of Sport is the best thing going on the internet. These guys rock. Give them a listen. You won't be disappointed. So there you have it. But you don't have to take their word for it. Find out for yourself. Listen to the Kings of Sport and make up your own mind. We guarantee we're the best show around.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, powered by Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com is your one-stop spot for the latest in sports, movies, gaming, music, and anything else in the world of pop culture. So we're part of the Place to Be Nation family. Show them some love, PlaceToBeNation.com. And this is a historic week, fellas, because not only are we one of the featured podcasts on Podbean, like, we up there with some of the greats. And some of the not-so-great, shout-out to Colin Cowherd. But this is also a historic week because we have our first official return guest. I mean, Bobby France could kind of count because he was our test show, and then he came back and did another show. But in terms of what you guys, the listeners, have heard, we've never had a return guest. And it's got to be big if we were going to bring somebody back to have a chat and have a discussion and have a conversation. So without any further ado, I will pass the mic to Bleacher Report's own Alfred Kunoa to introduce our guest this week.
Well, this next guest is a friend of the show. He's also a friend of mine, one of Nasty's boys deep in the heart of Texas, and he's here to talk about all kinds of sports. That's why we love him. He hosts the TJ McLennan at the Sports Half Hour, where he talks sports, he talks wrestling, he talks college football, pro football, and he's about to go off and go ham. We're doing the Texas Two-Step with TJ McLennan. What's up, buddy?
You know, guys, I think, because you're on the West Coast, and I'm here in Central, but a friend of early 2000 rap, I think I will drop my first words of, as E-40 once said, Jesus Christ had dreads, so shake them. I don't have none, but I'm planning on growing some.
Well, aren't we all, TJ? Well, let's, on that note, speaking of shaking, Johnny Manziel and the Texas A&M Aggies looked a little shaken for much of the game against Alabama. I will tell you that you did text me personally hours before that game and said, can't wait to talk to the Kings of Sport after the Aggies get boat race. Now, what made you think that the Aggies were going to get, quote-unquote, boat race, which they did for much of that game?
Well, a little behind the scenes. I texted you that while doing some honey-do shopping for in-laws who are coming in town at the great establishment of Target. Yeah, there you go. That's being a 31-year-old and being married, you do Target shopping on Saturday afternoons. But the reason why is it's easy to think that when Saban has a week off to prepare, his defense plays well. Sure enough, they didn't play that well to, you know, stop the force that is Manziel of over 400, you know, combined yards of passing and running. But he had enough to where, one, he could exploit that weak Aggie secondary, which even though they got all their players back from suspension from various whatever off-the-field incidents they've had for the past weeks, but also he had time to, you know, be able to force Manziel into horrible throws. One turned out to be a highlight reel play. The other strength off of a guy's helmet and return back for a sincere touchdown. So when Alabama has time, they can go and exploit weaknesses of his opponent they have facing. LSU, in 2011, when they won the national title, had time to prepare for that game, was able to stop their run, hence LSU was completely null and void that game. Notre Dame, they had time to figure out, hey, that defense is good, but if we attack KO and attack their front seven, we can run all over them. Next thing you know, Eddie Lacy's a top second-round pick because of that game. And with Manziel's case, when they played him in 2012, they got an Alabama team that had played two straight weeks against teams that ran the ball and who were ranked, and I believe they won two Mississippi State. Or maybe I think they hosted Mississippi State and won two LSU. Both those teams pounded them real hard, made them tired. That following week, here comes Manziel, a fresh a fresh freshman, I guess, for a redundant phrase, caught him off guard and caught him off some tired legs and exploited what Alabama was, a tired group, and, had his Heisman game. This time around, fresh legs, more time prepared, boat race.
Yeah, and that's something we actually did, or at least I touched upon earlier in the show, is when we talk about elite coaches with time to prepare. It's something that gets overlooked. A lot of people are on Oregon, myself included, to make it to the national title game. But against an Alabama, TJ, do you think with that time to prepare for that fast-paced offense, do you think that will neutralize Oregon like we've seen in the past with LSU and Auburn?
Well, I'll say this. That Marcus Mariota on Oregon is Johnny Manziel of the West. He plays the same type of ball as him. But the one thing that Oregon has that Texas A&M doesn't is who is going to be a finalist in New York for the Heisman. And if I could shout this, I'd probably hurt your listeners' ears, but I like talking the way that DeAnthony Thomas tweets, and that's in all caps.
Yes.
So
Black Mamba.
Without the Lil Wayne Black Mamba reference, I won't sound like him before the NBA All-Star game because I'm not drunk off Cicero. That's right. I think I said that as white as possible, Cicero. There you go.
Cicero.
I believe you mixed that in a trippy cup.
I don't know where Bun B is to help me out with that one, or the rest of Triple Six. But anyway, DeAnthony, he's a game breaker that A&M doesn't have. Sure, A&M had the 6'4", 14 receiver that all you could do is throw it up to him, and he would catch Manziel's scrambled balls. There you go, scrambled balls is another one that you can save for the archives. Boy, have me back. But you give Mariota time, he's going to find his receivers. You give DeAnthony Thomas some space, he's going to break it off for an 80-yard touchdown. And this is going to be a difference to that national title game. Now, the factor that's going to keep Alabama in it and make them a three-time champion is A.J. McCarron. He's a quarterback that gets overshadowed because of, one, the great Alabama running back that he's played with Eddie Lacy, T.J. Yeldon now, and also Trent Richardson back in the first title. But McCarron, he easily, if given time in that offensive line, which we saw against A&M, will give him that time, and he'll pick a defensive part, which he'll do to Oregon, and he'll go off for a 300-plus-yard game. So when they do make the national title game, it's going to be a tight, high-scoring one, because we saw with A&M and Alabama just this past Saturday with, I'll give it the edge to Alabama, just because they've been there, and McCarron is the best college quarterback that's going right now.
Yeah, I was very impressed by McCarron. He wasn't someone who was on my radar as an elite quarterback before this game, but he really, proved to me that when, the going gets tough, he can really take over that offense. You touched on DeAnthony Thomas. He's someone who I've followed since high school because he's a local kid in Los Angeles. What do you think his chances are in the NFL in terms of, I'm assuming he's going to come out after this year. What current NFL player do you think he most compares to?
I haven't seen Tavon Austin play, but they're the same build. Mm-hmm. The skinny guy, the speedy one, he's going to be a great kickoff returner, special teamers. He's not going to be the all-pro, elite, high fantasy draft pick that he looks like he could be right now for fantasy football-wise. Or he's not going to be the player that you're going to build a team around. He's going to be a nice complimentary receiver who can play slot, or he's going to be an athlete running back to where if you have a short screen pass, him. But primarily what he is that exactly, a complimentary role player that is someone that can break a game open.
Well, if he is going to be an elite kick returner, he's going to go very high in our league, right, Nate?
Hey, I need y'all to stop hating on Trendon Holiday. The man had a 40-point week.
TJ, so we're in this fantasy league. You might have heard about it. Commissioner Nathan decided to tinker with the settings because he thought it was Roger Goodell. And the settings are all out of whack. So out of whack that on my bench was Trendon Holiday, who earned me 41 points yesterday for his 155 return yards and a touchdown. Does that make any sense to you?
Of course, because I'm guessing you will get, 10 points per every yard and maybe a kickoff return is a special, 12-point bonus or something?
Something like that, yeah. You're pretty close.
Yeah,
you're saying that makes sense?
No, it doesn't. Okay. It's definitely a Goodell move.
I was about to hang up on you.
I've already gotten threatened that once through Twitter, so I'm going for a record here. See if I get the hat trick.
Hey, Marcus, you just mad that Trenton Holiday is a gamer, a baller, a playmaker, and a shot caller. All he does is win and return kicks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, winning.
Let's stick with the NFL, TJ, and talk about the big game tonight. Or I guess it's big.
Medium.
Yeah, medium. Big. I mean, it is Marvin Lewis. The nation gets to watch Marvin Lewis.
Yeah. Oh,
so,
yeah.
That'll be a big game.
Well, with Marvin Lewis, he used to get him against Omar Epps and the Steelers. So,
you mean what was the name you told us when we talked before the show that some of the Steelers fans have taken to calling Mike Tomlin?
Oh, well, Baldwin. It's funny how it rhymes. Steelers fans like to rhyme. So, hence, here we go, Steelers. Here we go. You know, we are a Dr. Seuss fan base, I guess you could say. So, but with this is a big game and. The realm that the whole entire AFC North after 1 week was 0-1. It's a division that's still up in the air. A 10-6 team, if not a 9-7, with the way that we've seen the Ravens play, could win that division. So any time that you go up against a favorite in Cincinnati, you need to get a win. And this is me talking as a Steeler fan, not me the professional breaker downer, because I hope the Reds guy, Andy Dalton. Yeah, I hope he, in his pregame meal, chokes on a wasabi pea and cannot make the game tonight. You know, kind of.
Wow.
Or, I would, could be a curly fry, whatever he eats. You know, a tofu shake. He might go to, I had the shake place that I had in my head and I completely whiffed. That's my fault. There it is.
When you look at the AFC North, you say that it's up in the air, but let's take a look at the teams. The Browns currently look like kind of a mess. They're 0-2. Brandon Whedon is not looking like he's making any improvements that they wanted him to.
Shocker.
The Ravens, of course, they lost 10 starters from the two Super Bowl team, the most ever, and they still look sloppy. The Steelers lost Marquise Pouncey. They lost their running back Le'Veon Bell, who's getting a lot of hype in the preseason. Don't the Bengals look like the most complete, deep team in that division? Shouldn't they win that division going away?
Yes, they do. This is me, when you ask me off air, if Marvin Lewis is a good coach, and I paused and I felt like I was kind of getting
down. I know you're
right. Yeah, I mean, they do for the fact that they have the best receiver in AJ Green, and they have a good quarterback in Dalton. I'm not going to give him the best quarterback ranking because I have yinzer colored eyes, but I still think Roethlisberger is their best quarterback in that division. You want someone that's going to be able to escape pressure, you go to Roethlisberger. You want someone to be mobile, you go to him. And I mean, Flacco, he has a Super Bowl title just because a mile high ball went over Tracy Porter's head and landed in Jacoby Jones's Dancing with the Stars lap. And that ball doesn't get there. They're out in the second round, and Flacco still has the moniker of can't win in big games. So I go with a guy that's been to 3 Super Bowls and been to, 4 AFC title games in his 10-year career, and Roethlisberger for that title. But defense-wise, they have, Montaluga from USC still playing back there and they had that guy that looks like Simba from Lion King with that big fro coming out of his helmet. And they had old-ass James Harrison who
and Geno Atkins,
won.
Yeah, they got Geno Atkins, okay. Who's a Pro Bowl defensive player.
Yeah. And then you have Harrison, I dare him to spin the ball tonight in front of, Dwyer's face, because I think Goodell will kick him out of the league just for all his pass discrepancies. So they're a good team, but they're a 10-6 squad that will get bounced from the first round to the Texans like they have for the last, 15 years?
That's what I like to hear. That's what I like to hear.
I don't know about that. I think this is the year.
And speaking of, you talked about the importance of this game, just looking at the schedule, this is a, quote-unquote, must-win game because both teams have tough challenges next week. Cincinnati hosts Green Bay, and the Steelers did Chicago. So could we be looking at, a situation where if the winner of this team, or winner of this game tonight could fall 0-3 easily after next week?
Well, yeah. I mean, we saw what Green Bay did last week to Washington. They torched them, and he's going to do it the following week. Aaron Rodgers has 3 elite receivers, and Jones and the white guy.
Nelson.
Jordy Nelson. Nobody ever remembers his name. Jordy Nelson.
Yeah. Wes Welker. I don't know. It's a white guy who runs in the slots. So we call everyone of those guys Wes Welker. So it's fine. So, yeah, Nelson, you have Randall Cobb, who has somehow emerged as the number one receiver. And you also have Jermichael Finley, who's playing very well. So that's the best offense, in my opinion, in the NFL as it is. And with the Steelers and the Bears, yeah, Chicago's good, but what? They've had two last-minute victories. So, I mean, wait, the Bengals game was a three-point victory in week one. And last week they needed, what, a last-second touchdown to get past a Minnesota team that barely could score against Detroit?
Yeah.
So this is Bears team. They're good, but, you know, I just don't – it depends. Is that game in – that game's got – what, in Pittsburgh or Chicago, that game?
Let me tell you. I know it's
the,
let's see.
Well, the point is, I'm not selling
it's
this,
Pittsburgh.
This Pittsburgh team.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a home game, which is good. It's Heinz Field, which is, I guess, an easy 3-point favorite with that one. But it's a Pittsburgh team that they look horrible against Jacksonville. Oh, not Jacksonville. Tennessee. But I'm not selling them short just because after one game and, you know, you had to learn an offensive line on the fly once Pouncey blew out his knee, which you could point back to karma for as Free Hernandez half.
Well, you know, speaking of selling people short, I'm going to make a quick left turn here because I've been waiting to talk to TJ all day for one reason and one reason only.
Hockey?
No. And not NASCAR. Not NASCAR either. But I want to talk about the Night of Champions. And a lot of people sold Daniel Bryan short. And this man overcame the odds and is now a two-time world champion with probably the least impressive combined reign of any two-time champion in the history of the sport. But props to Daniel Bryan. What did you think of the show overall? And do you think we see some funny business tonight with that world heavyweight championship?
One, yes. I mean, you look at the guest they invited in the Papa Roads, Dusty. So once he's on the scene, of course, I mean, he's never wanted to do something wacky with the finish. No, not Dusty Rhodes. No, never. Especially in the 80s with WCW. Never. But, hey, with Daniel Bryan, you know, he already won with being in the relationship with one of the Bella twins, Nikki or Brie. I forget which one it is. So,
nine
yeah,
boobs.
Good for him.
Brie. Flat chest. Brie. Yeah, Brie.
Yeah.
He got the non-crazy one.
Yeah, she seems down to
right. Once again, I watch a lot of reality shows, not the wrestling one, all because whatever my wife is into, that's what I get sucked into.
You're missing
so,
out. She would love it.
You know, she says that, but then she goes, wrestling is dumb. And I go, yeah, that's why I watch it while you're asleep and it's on DVR. So it makes sense that way. But with the Night Champions, fine. It was good. It got the point across, which sold the main story, which is the Bryan and Triple H and Orton feud. I would have liked, you know, this would have really undercut Orton's progress and what he's done if they would have thrown Sandow out to cash in his Money in the Bank and double screw Bryan over and let him be the face of the WWE. That would have been a good finish. But hey, let Daniel have his run. It leads him into Battlegrounds, which will be a transition pay per view into the next big major Survivor Series, which I'm sure they'll have Team Orton versus Team Bryan, and just let them feud up until Royal Rumble once Cena can come back and throw him some out in the mix. So it was good. It was good storyline-wise. It was good.
You mentioned Sandow. That didn't make any sense to me. We clearly saw Del Rio help to the back. Wouldn't you think that would be the ideal time to cash in? And there was no hint, no mention, nothing. Just ignored it.
Well, I mean, it's primarily because I still think they view him as a B player. Like, they'll wait unless, you know, I forgot what the finish was to Rio and Rob Van Dam, but they could do a thing where when Van Dam needs to take time off for his contract or whatever the date is, Van Dam wins to cut off Del Rio, and then he cashes in after that, which would be right around, guessing, the winter time. Or, hell, maybe they do a thing where they build him up, and then have the big cash the night after WrestleMania.
Well, you said that they view Damian Sandow as a B player, so then he should be the world champion, because let's face it, the world heavyweight title is a B title. It's a new intercontinental title. It really isn't a world championship. So don't you think from that standpoint he could grow as a world champion before maybe even becoming a WWE champion, and now's the time to see that?
Of course. It's just hard right now when you have one heel wrestler as a champion. You want to keep Sandow as your heel, your next transition is your next heel champion. So unless they have a plan to turn him face, which it doesn't really look like. You know, once Cody got fired, he was tweeting about how he was in favor of Triple H's decision. So it doesn't look like they're going to make that transition anytime soon. So until they find a babyface that can lead SmackDown, because we all know the porcelain doll of Christian is not going to be back anytime soon, to be that lead face for SmackDown, he's kind of stuck in purgatory.
Well, maybe we got a clue last night from some of those polls in terms of somebody coming back to help out, and that would be, according to the WWE Universe, the greatest WWE champion of all time, brother.
What he's alluding to is, you know, Hogan, listen, John Cena is out. I've got a little bit of a conspiracy theory. They were throwing a lot of teasers out there last night. They mentioned The Undertaker. Hulk Hogan won a poll. Sting won a poll. And it's just Vince McMahon loves checking the water level of his audience in an indirect, passive-aggressive manner to see, well, let's see if this person is still interesting. Is there a possibility that WWE could be making inroads to getting Hogan, Sting, Undertaker, all three into the WWE?
Yeah. I mean, you look at the latest WWE 2K14 game with Bleacher Report writer Brian Mazeek is doing a great job with releasing all the 30 matches. There's your plug for Bleacher Report right there.
Yes.
Fellow work. That's good. It's my contractual agreement right there I have with the show. So you plug it once. But you look at the first 10 matches, and I think 70% were Hogan matches. So that's one way to keep them in there. And, you know, just wait until the next wave of matches is going to be Undertaker matches. And that's, I'm sure they're going to blow up the streak of, hey, who can take him down? And unless Cena's going to be fine to have that big WrestleMania 30 match, which I would still hope that they do a world title or streak match, that I think that would be, might pay a great transition to see what they could do. That would have the most intrigue rather than having Sting come in, do one match at Mania with Taker, and then what? Who goes from there? From where? You know, I'd rather see title for streak and go from there. But bring Sting in, let him have his Hall of Fame career moment, whatever, send off, and have his one WrestleMania match, and, you know, keep him on as a legend and keep him on as a road agent post in-ring career.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Yes, yeah. And we already know the Warrior is on good terms at least at the moment. So who knows what the man for Parts Unknown could be doing with the company?
Yeah, that's true. Maybe hey, you know what? Bring in Warrior because they're in New Orleans. Bring back the Godfather to play Papa Shago and bring back Sid and let's have a WrestleMania 8 review.
Those are the only guys who are still alive from that card too.
Yeah, you're not lying.
Ric Flair's still alive,
barely.
Yeah.
Well, that's you provided me with a perfect segue, Marcus, because one of the big stories that kind of came in and flew under the radar just a little bit, but now people are starting to see the story, is somebody who is still alive and well, but their career may not be, and that is Jim Ross, who retired over the weekend from the WWE over the weekend. What'd you think about that when that story first came out, TJ?
It's news because of his status in wrestling history. It's news because of that. It'd be news if I'm trying to think of a big figurehead right now in other sports. If Bud Selig comes out and retires tomorrow, that's news. But it's not someone that you've seen, you know, for the last Jim Ross comes out every WrestleMania and calls a match and does a Raw appearance every now and then with their New York Oklahoma. So it's not like if tomorrow Jerry Lawler says, hey, I'm out, I'm never doing this again, then that's news because that's someone you've seen on Raw for the last 10 years, and now all of a sudden he's not there anymore. So that's why I feel it's big, but more of a 7. More of a 7 out of 10 on like, oh, my God, I can't believe this happened today.
Yeah, to me, Marcus, the biggest thing that kind of made me chuckle at this quote-unquote retirement was like, even if you don't put JR on TV, there's so much more that he could be doing to help your company. Like, why would you just send this guy home as an apparent punishment for the forum over during SummerSlam weekend?
Yeah, I didn't know he was actually doing stuff with the company anymore. I thought he was just selling barbecue sauce and going to Norman, Oklahoma for Sooner.
Yeah, pretty much he's just sitting at home. But I'm like, they could be doing so much more with this guy in terms of, you know, as a scout or in terms of developing characters. You know, JR, even if you don't put him on TV, this is a guy that, you know, still has a great mind for the business, and, you know, you could take advantage of it.
No, true, but you never know. Could be maybe a health reason. Maybe that Bill's palsy crept back up in there and he needs to take time. I mean, he is, what, 70, 75 years old?
No,
so.
He's 61, no, I think.
Yeah, Jerry Lawler's older than him.
Yeah, he's under.
What?
Yeah, he's only 61.
Just white looks older.
White does crack. White does crack, people. it's black that doesn't crack.
Huh.
Yeah, so he's not that old. And he's had health issues in the past. But yeah, I know he's been trying to lose weight. And, you know, Alfred and I saw him last month, and he seemed to be in decent shape. He wasn't, you know, too big or anything. So the whole story is weird. You know, Dave Meltzer reported that it was a forced retirement. And if that's true, that's unfortunate to hear, because they treated him like shit these past 20 years. And, you know, as someone who has a disease in Crohn's disease, I feel bad for people who have these diseases that they can't control. And for the way they treated him on TV, it was just really, it's frustrating and a little, you know, hurtful to watch sometimes.
Well, you know, now that it's a forced retirement, it does wreak a storyline. And, you know, I was listening to the Steve Austin podcast yesterday with Lawler, and Lawler brought up a good point on it, in that an old, I think this is Jerry Jarrett, brought this up and said, if it doesn't make it personal, it'll sell. So if they make it personal as an enforced retirement due to health reasons or whatever, I mean, it's a horrible storyline because it crosses a lot of lines, but people buy into it because of the emotional build, which, you know, they want to see Triple H get his, and I'll use a very white term, and comeuppance.
You want to see him hoist by his own petard.
Yeah, exactly.
I can speak the language, brother. I can speak the language.
Thank you. No, I'm going to the country club after this taping, so of course.
Oh, splendid.
Like Kerwin White. I'm going to go throw on my best sweater vest and my Old Navy slacks and head out to the country club for a quick round before it gets too dark.
Splendid.
Do you think they bring up the retirement on TV tonight?
Yes, I do. I think it's they're going to give JR, you know, hey, he retired pretty soon. I mean, they're in Cleveland tonight. I'm not sure when they're going to be headed back to the Midwest, around, or maybe your Tulsa or wherever in Oklahoma. But they give him a big farewell JR appreciation night, and that's whenever they somehow screw him over like they never do in his hometown. They never screw him over in his hometown ever. But, no, of course not, never. But, no, they find a way to, you know, give him a big night and give him this big retirement thing, and the next thing you know, Hunter comes out, blah, 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 maybe he's an RKO, and so on and so forth, and gets more heelish tactics over on him.
This is a great theory. I like this theory here.
Yeah, well, I do want to take a look at from the other side, though. Let's assume that this is 100% real and not a storyline, and JR is done with the WWE for now. If I'm Spike TV, if I'm Viacom, how quick am I on the phone to try to get that guy, not just for TNA, but also for Bellator, and to give them a presence in the MMA world?
Yeah, I mean, he's a great mind. He's also a name that brings over presence, so you would be stupid not to, you know, sign him over or offer him a deal. But with the way that Spike and with the way that TNN or the hell is their TNA? No, they are.
TNA.
Yeah. TNA. I was close. TNN, whatever. TNA, So, but with the way that they're not being able to pay their company, I saw a story today that Mickie James, spoiler alert, she's going to be dropping the title to ODB, and it's all because they can't come to a common ground for paycheck.
Why don't they just make a trade? TNA gives up Hogan, Sting, and Anderson to the WWE, and we get back JR.
All right, that's talent relations. Okay, maybe they can give, Cassius Ohno, who apparently can't make weight, over to
his skinny fat ass.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe he's like Wildcat Chris Harris, where he looks great on TNA, and then comes over to WWE, and they go, hey, yeah, all those enhancers? Yeah, not so much. And then he balloons out into a whale.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned Mickie James. Do you think there's still room for her in the WWE?
Oh, there's room for her.
Well, of course. You look back at WrestleMania, 29? They were trying to do a New Wave versus Old Wave Battle Royale or 10-woman tag team. So, yeah, there's always room to have her come back as a legend. Maybe they give her, I wouldn't say maybe a Hall of Fame retirement send-off, but you bring her back. Maybe you bring back her and Victoria and bring back Maria Kanellis.
No, somehow no, you bring those three in.
She's
burned that
bridge. Well, if they bring her in, they bring in the future of the business who's 36 years old, Mike Bennett.
How good would a psycho Mickey versus a psycho AJ feud be?
It sounds pretty psychotic. It does.
It sounds
so
crazy.
Yeah, it sounds pretty crazy. It sounds pretty nuts.
And they could have a match at WrestleMania with Miley Cyrus as the special guest referee. Boom.
Sadly enough, because they would want that and because it would sell tickets, they would make it happen. I'm still very angry there was no Tebow at WrestleMania 29. Still very angry at that.
I mean, he's got free time now. Maybe we'll see him in New Orleans next year.
That's true. I bet, you know, I'm trying to think. April, maybe they can fan a little Drew Brees.
Tebow would make for a great heel. They hate him out there in New Orleans. LSU country.
That's true.
Tebow should go into wrestling. He should go into the Performance Center and his whole character. He could be like this religious guy, and then he's actually a scumbag, and he's cheating the fans, and I could see that. Tebow would be a good heel.
Put him with the wife of the Southern Baptist preacher. There you go.
And they could bring back Reverend Devon and Deacon Bautista.
Right. He needs a job.
They already have Zeb Coulter. Just put him Zeb.
Well, here I know that's why you're talking about the celebrities coming back and being good heels. I saw this because I was listening to Eminem's Berserk song for the 15th time because the first 14 I didn't know what the hell Eminem was saying.
Mathers.
Yeah, but then he brought up the whole, you know, have a kid and let yourself go like K-Fed. I was thinking, Kevin Federline was a very good heel that one New Year's Day Raw they brought him in to face Cena or do something with Cena. I think they missed the boat with Federline.
I wrote an article talking about that. I got killed by the haters, which is great. Thanks for reading. But I completely agree with you, TJ, because he was getting legit heat. He's somebody who you could just hate. You look at Kevin Headline and Federline, it's not that go-away heat because the ratings came in. That was one of the highest-rated shows that they did in months. So
yeah.
I really think that they missed the boat with him, and I'd love to see more celebrity involvement with people who are engaged in the product because Kevin Federline, for all accounts, was.
And I'll give you a segue like Money Mayweather. He came in and did a phenomenal job, aside from breaking Big Show's nose. But he did a great job.
So, now that we're talking about that, give us your thoughts on the Mayweather fight.
Boring. Snooze fest. Good for you, Mayweather.
Really?
You can dodge punches.
It wasn't
you can dodge
boring.
Punches like Superman. There. Dodge, 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 dodge. Punch, punch, punch. Dodge, dodge, dodge. Punch, punch. And then he, you know, just methodically took out E from Entourage. So... And that's
the
summary of that fight.
But didn't you watch the fight and have in the back of your mind, weren't you nervous? I was nervous the entire fight because I was waiting for that one or two punches from Canelo that might hurt Floyd. And I think that's why I found the fight intriguing because you didn't know when or if it was coming in that fight.
I was hoping it would happen. I was hoping, but instead it was just, even if we would have hit him, at least it would have slowed him down to not a breakneck speed, but to at least a speed where he could hit him. I mean, he put him in the corner, a good number of times. I'm thinking about, I'm just going to make up a stat, but I don't want to lead your listeners down the wrong way, but he had him against the ropes, but Mayweather would come out. It's like, Mayweather reminds me of Spider Silva. He's going to toy with them, because he knows he's better than everyone else. And eventually there will be that one person that takes him down, and everybody will crown that next person champion, but you need Mayweather to sell tickets. You need Mayweather to look beatable during the build-up to the fight. And once the fight comes, there's no one that can touch him.
Who do you think is nuts for Mayweather?
Well, who's the guy that went on Twitter today that was calling him out?
I didn't see that. I saw that Carlos Molina was mouthing off at the press conference, and there's no way that Floyd.
We had one of our listeners went off Kanye style and called him a paper champion and a wife beater, which is that's still the best clip ever. When what was that fight, Marcus? The
Robert
leader.
Guerrero and
man. Yeah, he's a woman beater, man. He's a woman beater. He beats his old lady, man.
His dad
looking like Chavo Guerrero.
You could get more stereotypical than if you were playing Grand Theft Auto San Andreas with that guy.
Oh, man.
Like, oh, yeah.
Had the flannel on, and yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm surprised he didn't have the hat as well as the white shirt underneath it, and then you would have Conan circa 95.
Boom.
There is one guy, one other guy who has sort of called out Floyd Mayweather, and it's Bernard Hopkins, who said he'd be willing to drop down to 160 pounds for a fight with Mayweather.
Isn't Hopkins 150 years old, though?
Hopkins
is old as Jim Ross.
He's going on 49.
Right. And wait. No, that was Anthony Tarver in Rocky VI. Never mind. So I was going to make a Rocky VI reference, but no, that was a different guy. Different guy. Well, Hopkins, no, too old. Give me someone that's quick. I want speed. Speed versus Mayweather speed, and not Pacquiao, because apparently he is still picking up teeth from that last Marquez fight, where I think Marquez, did it come up that he,
He was clean. we discussed this earlier in the show, and I alluded to his Hulk-like physique, but he came back clean.
All right, that's good for him.
Got to stay one step ahead of the test.
Yeah.
I'm glad someone from Mexico came back clean. I know a lot of people who come back from Mexico, not PED clean, but something else not clean.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, just let that, that one sit and sink in, just like, yeah.
Yeah, just let that marinate for a while.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But before we let you get out of here, TJ, I do want to talk about your – I don't know if they're your, but I guess they're in the same state. And I don't think we – I think the last time we talked it was before Dwight Howard went to the Rockets.
All right.
So I don't think we've had a chance to talk about the – about your opinions on that since that move went down. So what do you think about Dwight and James Harden and that squad that's forming down there in Houston? Do you think they're contenders or pretenders?
No, I mean contenders for the fact that Harden can play his not the superstar role, which he was thrust into last year. He was fine when he was on the Thunder, where he didn't have to be in the spotlight of saying, hey, I got to carry this team to 45 points a night or else we're going to lose. Now Dwight Howard goes into, I'm the superstar that everyone's going to love here in Houston. Harden floats back into that number two role, and Jeremy Lin is a spare part as he was in New York whenever he went on his, I'm not even going to say it. No, I refuse to buckle into ESPN pressure and do the horrible insanity puns with Jeremy Lin's last name. God awful, and I'm very upset we all had to go through that. But
it was a magical week. It was a magical 6 days.
It was just like everything in the internet age. It's a magical 6 days before we moved on to something else. But with the Rockets, Aseek is a good backup center who can play role player minutes and be just as good as a defensive force as Howard is. You have Harden, who's going to average 40 points. Dwight's going to be a healthy Dwight at that because he's had a whole offseason to rehab that back that plagued him in Los Angeles, and he can get back to not having to share a role with Gasol. So I think the Rockets, they take San Antonio's spot as the leader of that division, and they go on as a two seed.
Wow. I'm not buying it yet. I haven't really had time to wrap my head around NBA yet after free agency, but a two seed seems a bit high. I have no faith in Dwight Howard after watching him for a year in Los Angeles to be a leader.
To his credit, it was a bad fit in Los Angeles. And he was hurt, yeah. And, you know, Mike D'Antoni and Dwight Howard was a match made in hell.
Of course.
Yeah, you keep that's sipping right. the Rocket Kool-Aid there.
I'm not sipping the Kool-Aid.
No, I'm talking about TJ.
Oh, TJ. Yeah, TJ, you keep sipping that Kool-Aid.
Of course.
What a troll.
Well, especially in Houston, they have a special Kool-Aid, as we referenced earlier.
In Styrofoam cups.
In the red, right? The red Solo cups.
And some Jolly Ranchers.
That's right,
and some
the little Marcus Russell group.
Oh, we'll leave it there. Hashtag Trippy Cup for this episode.
Been tripping, man.
Here, I thought you were going to go talk on my magical run that baseball hasn't seen since the 69 Mets, and as my 2013 Pirates are looking to make their first postseason appearance.
I mean, we were trying to get through the show without talking Pirates, but I guess we can make an exception.
You got 30 seconds to talk about the Pirates.
All right, Arsenio Hall had his first show the first time the Pirates, the last time the Pirates had a winning record. So we'll leave it at that. Arsenio leaves and comes back, and the Pirates make the postseason. Coincidence? I think not. We missed Arsenio. We missed him. That's what it was.
Well, that makes sense. Who can't?
I mean,
that
you can't argue with the logic.
No.
No. It's like, you know, hey, why'd they get good? Oh, forget sabermetrics and Andrew McCutchen being an MVP and Liriano a Cy Young candidate. We missed Arsenio. That's what it was. We were on an Arsenio boycott for those last 21 years.
And the posse's back, so now the Pirates are winning again.
Of course. We need to, you know, get the dog pound, start whooping it up with our arms in a circle, which is great for us suburb kids to do, especially in celebrations. So, yeah, we're glad Arsenio's back. We missed him.
See, you don't get that type of informative analysis anywhere else than on the Kings of Sport with T.J. McClune. And I'm telling you, because, you know, that's not just a fact. That's something that makes you go,
That's right, CNC.
So we're going to end it up this week with T.J. But before we let you go, man, let the people know about your podcast and about everything else that you got going on, because you are definitely just on Twitter an entertaining person to follow.
Well, thank you. You can follow that at TJ McAloon. So that's McLoon, because anybody tries to spell McAloon, they miss and then they don't follow and then I get sad and I eat ice cream and I'm sad because I eat and I eat because I'm sad. There it is. I brought the show to a depressing halt. I'm happy I had to do that. Podcast, I try to release every weekend, which I did join Place to Be Nation. I'm glad. To be on with Brad and company, so very well with them. You can find it on there, my website, pjmathlune.com, iTunes and Stitcher Radio. We're all over there, but yeah, primarily every weekend. We used to do the Fantasy Football Hit with former Bleacher Report writer, now current Fox Sports, Jay Clemens. That was last week. This week, because football season's in such big demand and heat, I'm going to have a guy on from soccer from England. That's the way to go. They want a football, so I gave them football, the original football, because I like doing that like that.
So I wonder.
We can talk Premier League if you want to hit that real quick.
Arsenal, impressive start for the Gunners. I'm very impressed by their start.
Yeah.
It won't last.
Well, I mean,
Dennis Black and Asia is very happy about this conversation right now.
Well, I mean, it's still Man U with, you know, RVP and what, Rooney is still in and out.
Rooney's still out from that. Yeah, he's still hurt from that injury, from the cut or whatever he suffered.
Okay. Right. And plus, we have America. Everybody's going to wrap themselves in the flag pretty soon, so you might as well start watching Premier League. So
get ready for that.
So whenever, you know, you're looking at the Ukraine, and they have, I'm sorry, not Ukraine, Argentina, and they have people who look like they could be a James Bond villain with blonde hair and slicked back like a Sanchez headband, you know, because, yeah, you saw him on Tottenham the week before that in NBC. So, yes, watch your EPL.
I want to know why is ESPN trying to get me to care about America qualifying for the World Cup? Like, aren't we at that point where that should be expected of our team?
Well, it's just because they want that big global number for, hey, soccer's on. So it's on ESPN. So if you're an American at some resort in, say, Barbados, you can turn it on. Or if you're someone out in Turks and Caicos, then, hey, there's USA playing soccer and Clint Dempsey and out the door and people who trip over heels and act like they've been shot in the face.
Like, I'm with Tony Kornheiser on this. Like, if your country outnumbers the other country, like, 50-1 in terms of population, it shouldn't be a big deal that we're beating these countries that can barely afford shoes.
How far do you see America going in the World Cup, TJ?
You what?
How far do you see USA going in the World Cup?
Gold medal or cup or whatever the hell they call it. No. They got to make it to the knockout round. They have to, and it can't be a thing like in 2010 where they have to rely on a Landon Donovan goal in the last minute to qualify for the knockout round. It's got to be a thing where they get into a group, they finish first, and they get a good draw in the round of 32, so they can at least make it to the Elite Eight. They got to get past that. If they can do Final Four, that's a win. Eight's a win. And if they somehow get to the finals against Brazil or Greece or Netherlands,
slow down. They're not making finals.
All right, Saddam. We'll see where we can go from there. But,
Wow.
I'm sorry there, Mark. But it's realistic to have an Elite Eight with Jurgen and with Dempsey as the main goal scorer and out the door playing in the box. It's reasonable for an Elite Eight. It's reasonable for that.
Yeah, all right, Marcus?
Yeah, that's reasonable. It just all depends on the draw. I mean, it depends on who they get stuck with in that initial pool. And I think before Israel was Donna who knocked them out.
Yeah, they don't want any of those black
you're
stars.
You're not from Ghana. Stop it. We didn't say Liberia.
Twice Africa, and I was cheering for Ghana, and I'm not ashamed of it. Go Ghana, go Michael Essien.
Easy there, Chappelle. Easy there.
Oh, TJ's got the gun loaded today.
Do Nate now.
It's all about that hip hop. All right, Black Star.
Is this any way for two Place to Be Nation familial shows to get along?
It is. It's very nice. Now, if you only get all the wrestling people on board, we'll be all right.
I think one day we'll have to talk to Brad and those guys and just like do one colossal podcast with all of the shows and like 50 people talking at one time.
Tony, if you want a good show, get Scott Keith on. I saw he's doing the writers for Wrestling Part. If you want a good mind, plus Canadian, so that's double good mind.
We
right
love
there.
Canada.
Yeah, some of our best listeners are in Canada.
And half of our guests.
Half of our guests.
And I'm sure they all smell like maple syrup if you could. Tony, we got to talk hockey. We could have talked hockey, Jesus, and the Penguins and how they'll go 82-0 and 16 straight wins. And make it to the Stanley Cup. And if anybody disagrees, I will find them and fight them right here.
I don't even see how hockey is in their preseason right now because I'm like, didn't we just get finished with you? Why are you back? It's football season.
Yeah.
It's not.
It's almost hockey season. October 1st. It's back. Get ready.
Right. Yes. I wore my LA Kings t-shirt jersey yesterday. By Kopitar.
I don't get excited for hockey until the playoffs. I'm more excited to see AJ Styles cut a promo on Dixie Carter next week than preseason hockey.
Oh, okay. No one's watching preseason hockey. Yeah, that's fine. But regular season hockey is better than TNA.
Yeah, that's true, too. If your listeners want a good site, the Florida Panthers opened up their preseason today against Nashville at 2 o'clock in Miami. And I have more people at my beer league hockey games than they do at this game. I think they had a total of like 10 show up.
A rare 2 o'clock game on a Monday.
the old 2 o'clock on a Monday game.
Yeah. That should be a contest. Who draws more, the WNBA or preseason NHL?
Oh, WNBA.
Yeah, I get the WNBA for sure.
Yeah, the southern states, yes. My northern states, my Twitter feed of all my Pittsburgh hockey friends are already blowing the team up for a 5-4 loss yesterday. So, yeah.
As long as Skylar Diggins is there, I'm there.
When does the WNBA finish, Marcus? When's their playoffs?
Playoffs start this week. So, I think the finals are...
Are the Sparks in it?
Yes, they are. They're playing.
I'm saying, we're Bound for Glory. When I come out from Bound for Glory, we can go see a WNBA game. I'm sure tickets is like $2, $3.50.
They're playing Brittany Griner's team in the first round. So,
okay, a road trip WNBA game for the Kings of Sport.
Don't ask me why I know about this, about the WNBA, but...
Yeah, you know a little too much.
It's my job.
Like Alfred knowing about all the boy bands a couple weeks ago.
Hey, whoa, another round of the boy band.
I really should have done a screening process before I picked my co-host.
Yeah, messing people on the internet, that's what happens.
Turn up my heart. I got catfished.
There's nothing a little wrong with little 98 degrees, some una noche. No, nothing wrong with that.
I got catfished. I haven't felt this bad since Manti Te'o's girlfriend died.
Her anniversary was last week.
Yeah, I saw that. That's crazy. Poor Linnea. Whatever happened to that dude? Yeah. Like the guy that was the Tua Sisopo?
Renaya Tua Sisopo?
Yeah, whatever happened to him? Did he get like charged with anything or punished?
After the Dr. Phil interview, he sort of rode off in the sunset.
And 15 minutes is up.
Yeah.
Hanging out with Hollywood Simpson?
He might be because
it's okay, bro.
Yeah.
All right, that's it. That's enough for this segment. Again, big shout out to TJ for stopping by again. The first two-time guest. in the history of the Kings of Sports. So we'll see. If you like this episode, we might have him back for a third time.
I'm like your Chris Thompson for the Cabanas podcast. You can call me Mr. 1859 right now.
All right. So that's TJ McLoon. We are the Kings of Sport, and we'll be back in just a little bit. Swallows had them niggas acting bad at the club with them hollows. Having rent, big problems trying to get it up. Well, oh well, one cup of me, I had your shit on stay. I wake up in the morning and I'm separated. In the bag with my homies and I show hate. Grenadine, he be tripping cause they don't respect him. That nigga rum, man, that nigga gets dumb. I can't wait until they mix me. I'm going in their mouth, down their throat, and to their kidneys. Hurricanes having motherfuckers seeing things. Courage juice, watch when I get loose. Hurricane, but you can call me Slurricane. Slurricane, strong enough to start the engine, man. Hurricane, but you can call me Slurricane. Slurricane, strong enough to start the engine, man. I'm perving, swerving, fucking with tycoon shit. Shit, it's time to swip up another mix. Mob to the stove. Oh, it's 151. Got to catch Charlie Foley close.
Welcome back to the podcast that's causing a panic all around the planet. From Boston to Boise, Fargo to Fresno, Orlando to Ontario, and all points in between. You're listening to the Kings of Sport on the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Yo, this is Gary Washburn from the Boston Globe, and you're listening to King of Sport. Keep tuning in. You know you're going to get something good.
I appreciate you having me, and I will make this note. At least, like, on the college beach, like, around here, I've got an incredible streak, like, of being the coolest student in the freshman. Like, it is Globetrotter-esque being the coolest student in the freshman. I'll take that one at the very least.
And welcome back to the Kings of Sport, ready to close up shop for another week. And it is the segment that you guys wait for each and every week. Often imitated, never ever duplicated. Segment 4, and we're going to break the format, Brother Alfred. And I guess full disclosure, since we like to keep it real, this is Keeping It Real Radio here. It's just me and Alfred right now because we're recording this 2 days after we recorded the first segment. In the second segment.
This is a marathon show. There's nothing wrong with that.
No.
We've been in the studio all day, and we're grinding it out for our loyal listeners.
That's right. We take no days off. Because hard work pays off.
I thought there was going to be a Darren Young reference there. I was trying to see how you were going to tie that in.
No, I just ignored Darren Young just like the WWE does. he's just one half of the shoulders that Daniel Bryan gets hoisted up on.
Yeah, just another guy, just another dude. Just there, paying his bills.
I mean, just side note, to anybody that saw Raw this past Monday, that was a weird segment because, first of all, Daniel Bryan gets this hero send-off, even though he got stripped of the title, and then you got the primetime players, who I like the primetime players, but you got Titus O'Neil, who is like a tall dude, and Darren Young, who's an average-sized dude, hoisting Daniel Bryan up on his shoulders, and Bryan keeps slipping off during that final segment.
Like, yeah, they had to rehoist him up. I was wondering what was going on over there.
Yeah, they had to rehoist him up in like the closing scene. He can't even do the yes with both hands because he's got a hold one hand on Darren Young's afro to keep himself steady.
That's why he slipped off. It was all that afro sheen.
He's like, what's going on, Darren? Just let yourself go. It always comes back to Coming to America.
It has to.
But yeah, we got some good stuff to talk about here in segment 4. We're going to go through the list. We're also going to talk about some breaking news that just occurred this evening. But before we get into that, we got to take care of some business. And You know, we like to send a shout out to the good people at Audible.com. Audible.com is the premier provider of digital audiobooks with over 100,000 titles to choose from in every genre. We're talking about thrillers, business, romance, comedy, sci-fi, and many, many more. Audible files play on iPhone, Kindle, Android, and more than 500 devices for listening anytime and anywhere. And for you guys, the listeners of the Kings of Sport podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. And we're talking about some great books, folks, like The Hobbit, The Witness, Gone Girl, Bad Luck and Trouble, 50 Shades of Grey Ladies, and, of course, The War for Late Night by Bill Carter. So to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. Again, that's audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport to get your free audiobook today. You guys are down with the Kings. Audible's down with the Kings. So get down with audible.com. So now, like I mentioned, Alfred, there was a big trade and a rare NFL trade earlier tonight. And I've had thoughts about giving up on my fantasy team 2 weeks in.
Already?
I mean, I don't have a Jacoby Jones or a Trendon Holiday.
You only have yourself to blame, brother. You know, I'm sorry. I would feel bad if you felt like giving up already after that beating I laid down on you. So I would feel personally responsible.
Hey, the only reason that you beat me, man, is because Peyton Manning is confusing one wide receiver for another, and Wes Welker is taking all the receptions from Eric Decker.
That's very creative excuse making. That's a good one.
And I mean, if you're just looking at the back of the jerseys going full speed, Welker and Decker are kind of similar.
They are.
So, I mean, like, Eric Decker should have had, like, 50 receptions and 5 touchdowns by now. But we will digress. I'm not giving up on my fantasy team 2 weeks in. But there is a team in the National Football League that appears to be giving up on their season. And that's the Cleveland Browns, man.
Oh, they've given up on their season, all right. They've traded Trent Richardson, their stud superstar rookie, or he was a rookie running back and had a rookie superstar season last year, and they've traded him to the Indianapolis Colts. And it's a very, very, very aggressive move by the Indianapolis Colts, who have lost Dwayne Allen. They had a very weak running game with Ahmad Bradshaw and Vic Ballard. Now they have that power running back that they wanted and that they had coveted. And now the Browns, like you said, have become a virtual wasteland. It was kind of weird seeing Trent Richardson's usage in the first two games of the season. They had Brandon Whedon throw the ball 53 times. This is Brandon Whedon we're talking about, while Trent Richardson ran the ball 13 and 18 times for 47 and 58 yards in the first and second game, respectively. So you kind of wonder now in hindsight if they were just phasing him out of that offense because they knew they wanted to ship him. A very shocking move to me, but it only makes the Colts better, and the Browns are now a 2014 draft lottery team.
And let me tell you, you could tell the Cleveland has thrown in the towel, because not only are they shipping Trent Richardson out of town for a late round, first round draft pick from the Indianapolis Colts, but they also have benched Brandon Whedon, Jason Campbell, who is a capable NFL quarterback that started over 70 games in the National Football League, but Brian Hoyer, the unproven Brian Hoyer, who in 5 years in the NFL has become about as distinguishable as me or Big Nasty.
Now, speak for yourself, but the thing about Brian Hoyer is that...
But hold on, first of all, I think I just made up a word there. I don't think distinguishable is a word.
We'll take it. We can trademark that. We'll make some money off it. It's okay. The Kings of Sport is brought to you by the word distinguishable.
Yes, these are the type of words we make up at 4 o'clock in the morning. That's how we do it.
Keeping it real radio, for sure. And Brian Hoyer may be a better choice than Jason Campbell. Jason Campbell has a very slow delivery at this point in the ball game. He's obviously not a starter or a backup.
Is Brian Hoyer a starter?
No, he's not. But behind that offensive line against the Minnesota Vikings pass rush, which year to year is very, very strong, hasn't been what it has been in the past couple of seasons. But with Jared Allen back there, I don't think that
Jason Campbell would be able to get off the passes he needs to get off in order to survive. I really think it would just be a one-and-done type deal. You saw the Bears thought that they had a capable backup quarterback in Jason Campbell as they prepared for a potential Jay Cutler injury. And when that happened, Jason Campbell did not deliver. And I think the Browns realized that.
But there is one man. I mean, personally, I think Jason Campbell's still a better option, even at this stage in his career, than Brian Hoyer. But there is one man on the free agent market that not only will provide a spark to your offense, but will put butts in the seats. And if you sign him, not only do you get one man, but it's almost like you get four people for the price of one. And I'm talking about Timothy Tebow. Because if you sign Tim Tebow, not only do you get a great quarterback who all he does is win, but you get the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit riding shotgun, Big Nasty.
I don't want to say that the Tim Tebow experiment is over. It would break my heart because of how bad he wants to be a quarterback. I think somebody should just have him have an opportunity to be a quarterback. But it is not coming back anytime soon. I mean, we would have to get a historical.
If Blaine Gabbert and Brian Hoyer are starting in the NFL, I don't want to hear anybody complain about Tim Tebow as a starting quarterback.
That's where I'm at, but the way I look at it is if Blaine Gabbert is starting and now that he's hurt, Tim Tebow still isn't able to find a job with Jacksonville, and you saw that sad protest that Jacksonville fans tried to have when they were outnumbered by members of the media.
It was like the Tebow family reunion out there, 15 people.
It looked like Occupy Wall Street out there. It looks like Tim Tebow's career is in jeopardy.
I mean, yeah, first of all, yeah, Tim Tebow fans, you got to do better. For real. In Jacksonville, what else are you doing on it? What, I don't know what day the quote-unquote rally was, but if you in
Jacksonville. It wasn't on a Sunday.
Yeah, if you're in Jacksonville and it's a weekday, you ain't got much else to do. Go out and support your boy. But second of all, there is a lot of bad quarterback in the NFL. We mentioned Hoyer. We mentioned Gabbert. Christian Ponder. There are some sad sack quarterbacks in the NFL, and I'm not going to be somebody that is just blindly loyal to Tim Tebow. I understand he has limitations. He cannot throw the ball. He's not the most accurate quarterback. But if you put him in the right system with the right pieces around him and make that commitment to that type of offense, you can win some ball games, as we saw in Denver. It baffles me that Tim Tebow does not have a job with all these terrible quarterbacks in the NFL.
But you talk about having a commitment and operating the correct system. That is what scares coaches away from Tim Tebow, because they would have to go all in. And he's getting you fired if it doesn't work. It's not like he's Brian Hoyer, where he's somebody you can just bring in, get his reps, and if it doesn't work out, you cut him. You're going to have to change the philosophy of this, because let's face it, Tim Tebow isn't a traditional quarterback. He's just a different type of hybrid player, to where he's going to be running the ball, he's going to be running a lot of zone reads, and then he's going to be making his throws, his 8 completions a game, and his couple big plays, but you're going to have to change the entire philosophy of a team if you really, really do believe in Tim Tebow as your starting quarterback.
You know, I remember there was a team back in the day. They had a funny looking man. And nobody believed in him. But they gave this funny looking man the ball. And he ran with it. And they became champions. And ladies and gentlemen, that funny looking man. Pause for dramatic effect.
This is very dramatic.
Ladies and gentlemen, that funny looking man was named Dwayne Wayne. Not Dwayne Wade, but Dwayne Wayne on the popular show A Different World. And you'll stick with me, Big Nasty. You'll see the segue here in a second.
I'm waiting.
For those of you that don't know, A Different World was a sequel to The Cosby Show, a spinoff, if you will. It was basically built as a vehicle for Lisa Bonet. We all remember Lisa Bonet from the 90s, late 80s, with her fine mixed self. She was married to Lenny Kravitz at one point, and then disappeared, never to be seen again. That Lisa Bonet. She had a show called A Different World. And it was basically about an experience at a historically black college. Lisa Bonet was crazy.
The only reason she got that show in the first place was because Bill Cosby was sick of her being on the Cosby Show. But Bill Cosby, being the gangster that he is, he didn't just fire her. He said, okay, Lisa, you don't want to be on my show? I still got you under contract. So I'm going to make a show for you and still get paid as an executive producer.
No more pudding in your green room.
So, yeah, Bill Cosby created a show for an actress that he had a problem with on his own show and still found a way to get paid. So, anyway, Lisa Bonet on A Different World, she only lasted a season because she was crazy. And NBC had a choice. We could either cancel the show or we could retool the show and work with a different actor as the lead. And they saw a young black man with some flip-up sunglasses and some Dayglo neon jeans named Kadeem Hardison. And Kadeem Hardison, a.k.a. Dwayne Wade, carried that show for the next 7 years or 8 years, however long it lasted. And that's the same way I feel about Tim Tebow.
Wow. Coming full circle, and that was a very underrated show, and many would argue that Tim Tebow is an underrated quarterback. Just like they'd argue he was overrated. The opinions go across the board, but his curtain call seems to be coming in soon if he doesn't at least take a job with the CFL.
And I don't even, like, I'm one of these dudes, like, everybody that wants to say Tebow needs to go to the CFL, I am somebody that says chasing your dreams is cool and all, but sometimes chasing your dreams and going to Canada on faith doesn't always work out. I'm not.
Not that you know anything like that.
Not that I would know anything about a situation like that. But, I mean, first of all, the CFL, the field is wider, so you have to be, and it's crazy to say, but in some instances, you have to be a better passer in the CFL than you would in the NFL.
Yeah, and it would force him to be better. And another thing going in his favor is obviously the competition isn't as elite as it is in the NFL. So while learning that craft and the mechanics of being a better passer, he would be doing so against subpar competition that hopefully would help his confidence.
Yeah, so I'm just saying, man, if, like, people in Cleveland are waking up today or tomorrow, whenever you listen to this, in a world where Brian Hoyer is your starting quarterback for the rest of the season. Brian Hoyer.
The dream come true. He grew up a Browns fan from the Cleveland area.
My buddy Hat Club Andy, I think Hat Club listened to the show. Shout out to Hat Club. Hat Club Andy, a lifelong Browns fan, will be a better starting quarterback than Brian Hoyer. Like this is a joke. Like, I mean, I'm nothing against Brian Hoyer, but why are we living in a world where Brian Hoyer has a job in the NFL, let alone a starting job, and Vince Young is unemployed? Like, come on.
How do we know Brian Hoyer is going to be that bad? What if this is another Kurt Warner story? The Vikings don't have much film on Brian Hoyer. How are they going to prepare for him when midweek they find out that not only is Trent Richardson not going to be here, who I'm sure they focused their game plan around, but now they have to prepare for Brian Hoyer.
They have to prepare for Brian Hoyer. That has never been said in the history of sentences.
And that is what I'm saying, is maybe he's got some tricks up his sleeves that the Vikings just weren't ready for. Maybe he's got an okey-doke, some trick plays, Statue of Liberty, some Doug Flutie-type stuff that's going to catch the Vikings by surprise.
Yeah, I'm sure Leslie Frazier is up along with us at 4:20 in the morning saying,
having fits!
I don't know what we're going to do about Brian Hoyer. How do we defend that? Brian Hoyer. Cleveland, you got, yeah, Trent Richardson to the Colts. I don't even know if that's a great move for the Colts, but it's a pretty good move. For Cleveland, you're just throwing in the towel.
The reason I love the move for the Colts is because Andrew Luck becomes more dangerous, because defenses are going to have to respect the running game, but at the same time,
if Trent can stay healthy.
If he can stay healthy, that's always the asterisk, or it's been the asterisk with him since he's come into the league in his short career. But Trent Richardson isn't going to see those 8-man boxes. There's now a threat at quarterback in Andrew Luck, and if you want to stack the box, go right ahead, because he's got receivers on the outside like T.Y. Hilton and some of Darius Hayward Bay to throw to, even Colby Fleener. So these guys both, I think, are going to be helped. Their stats fantasy wise, I think it makes them both very viable.
Well, finally, before we move on to the list, I think the biggest question is, does the NFL, now that Trent Richardson is a Colt, do they reshoot the commercial for their fantasy football with Trent Richardson?
They just have to superimpose a Colts t-shirt on him. It's going to be like moving around in the air and wherever he goes. Maybe you see a glimpse of the Browns jersey and it just follows him around. So they could do some cheap editing there.
And the only reason I like that commercial is because of your boy, Demarius, because he's like, only winners get wings.
Get wings. He says it in the athlete talk.
Yeah, only winners get wings. Oh, boy. But yeah, we're not going to talk about fantasy football this week.
Why not? Is there any particular reason why you don't want to talk about fantasy football? Is it because I'm undefeated? Is it because I beat you?
Hey,
is it because I scored near the highest points in the league? Well, what is it?
It's Wednesday night, so tomorrow will be a new start to the fantasy football week. So, I mean, talking about this is old news. Besides, Marcus had the best player in the league and kept him on his bench. So,
well, I got me a fantasy football one-man juggernaut by the name of Demaris Johnson. So we'll see how that works out.
Who do you play franchise this week?
I play franchise in a battle of 2-0 teams. Potential, because I don't want to give him too much credit, and I don't want to talk about him too much on the show, but a potential championship showdown. But, you know, I put the emphasis on the word potential because I don't know if he's on my level.
Funny thing is we've got two divisions in the Briscoe Sanders League. One is it's Division I football. Of course, shout out to that classic. Was it Mike Gundy?
Yes.
It's Division I football.
Oh, no. That was the coach of Colorado. What was it? Dan? I'll get back to you.
It's not intramurals. It's Division I football, brother.
Hawkins.
Dan Hawkins. Yeah, okay. I'm thinking, cause Gundy was, I'm a man. I'm 40.
Yes. It was that meltdown.
Yeah. Two of the greats. But, so the first division is, it's Division I football, brother. And then the second one is the, Woodcrest Freeman division, I believe.
Yes.
Which is a shout out to the Boondocks, who should be starting up season 4 here pretty soon.
For the next 5 years. They have like one season every like 5 years.
Yeah. I mean, I wish we could do that. Like we could just put out one podcast every 5 months. And then just like when the fans are like, the listeners are like, why don't you guys do more? You'd be like, hey, greatness takes time. Cause like if you look at Aaron McGruder's Twitter feed, like that's all he'll do. Like people are like, why does it take so long? Hey man, we doing good work here. It takes a while.
Gandhi quotes of waiting and patience.
Yeah. Like I want to get to that point where I can just be like a dick to the fans and take my time.
Yeah.
Be like, Nate, why is it taking 7 months for the next Kings of Sport to come out? Rome was not built in a day, my son. but let's get to the list because, this is a great list, topic. And it is one that we wanted to do last week. Technical issues got in the way. So we're going to run it back because you guys did leave us some feedback on Facebook. This week's topic, coming off of the heels of the schools, high schools, colleges getting back in session was, if you could go to a fictional high school, college, university, where would it be? And so to kick things off, since Brother Marcus is not here with us tonight, I'm going to go ahead and let Alfred go first.
Well, thank you, Brother Nate. And we're going to kick this list off with McKinley High School. Now, I'm not sure I would actually want to go to this high school based on the little time that I got to know it, but it is basically a shout out to what I feel is one of the most underrated television shows in history, if not the most underrated television shows in Freaks and Geeks. It was a Judd Apatow product, launched the careers of Jason Segel, Seth Rogen, James Franco. It was a very good show, coming of age show, and show on NBC that really got a raw deal. I think should still be around to this day. Of course, Segel and Rogen and Franco would be too big of stars to be starring on it by now, but.
Not Franco. James Franco would do anything.
He would do anything, especially as long as he's high. You just get him high and tell him, hey, James, go over to a carnival at the fairgrounds. We're going to have you, you know, do a dunk tank. My second list should be close and near and dear to your heart, Brother Nate, because it's Degrassi. Now, again, I'm not sure whether or not the high school would be all that great, but I've never really been to Canada.
And A, I'd be hanging out with Brother Nate in Canada. And B,
at least
Drake.
At least for 3 months.
At least for 3 months. Yeah, we could make a trip and you can give me a tour or whatnot. Go back in history. You never know what could change. And Drake's got this new phrase, which I'm not a fan of, but he says no new friends. No new friends. No new friends. No new friends. No new new. So I would go back in time to Degrassi where he was a wheelchair bound kid and I would make friends with him. I would be one of his old friends so that when he became famous, I would be one of those non-new friends who got to roll with Drake and take advantage of him until he gets broke, which I hope does not happen. The third and final high school shouldn't surprise you at all, Nate, because it's something that I have brought up on the show and I was ridiculed by you and Marcus. And that's Hogwarts University. Harry Potter,
okay,
Fan Nation, stand up.
That's it.
I don't have to explain myself.
Show's over. Show's over.
Snape would be there. You got Harry Potter. I would be a wizard, Nate. I would be a wizard. I would be able to do anything I wanted with the wand. How dangerous of a world would we be living in if I had the power of a wand? Hocus pocus!
You got me up at 4:30 in the morning talking about some Harry Potter, man.
You know it. Have you seen all 7 of them yet? Have you read all 7 of them yet?
No, I've read none of the Harry Potter books. I think I saw the first 2 movies and the last 2 that were really one.
You gotta get on that, Nate. Once you start, you will not stop.
I'm more of a Percy Jackson fan. Even though I thought, the only reason I got sucked into Percy Jackson was because I thought it was about a black dude, because Percy Jackson is a pretty black name.
It is. It sounds like a wide receiver, to be honest.
Like Percy Jackson and the Olympians sounds like an old Motown group.
It does. In the Olympians, especially.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Apollo, Percy Jackson and the Olympians.
When I think of that, I think of just the African-Americans standing on stage, putting their fist up, you know? Percy Jackson and the Olympians to me.
Are you talking about, who was it? Was it John?
Jesse Owens?
No, it wasn't Jesse Owens.
No,
because Jesse Owens was at the Olympics with Hitler.
That's right. You're
thinking of, it was Tommy, now I'm going to have to look it up.
John Carlos.
Yeah, John Carlos, Tommy.
Smith.
Tommy Smith, yep. Yeah.
And then you got the white dude just standing there like, God, they're going to, the revolution is happening and I'm in the middle of it.
It was Peter Norman from Australia. It's like John, Tommy, Carlos, Tommy Smith, John Carlos, and then Peter Norman from Australia, who just like, all right, fists up. That's way to go, way to go. I'm down, brothers. I'm down.
I'm down.
But no, Jesse Owens was at the Olympics in Germany with Hitler. We'll have to talk about that 1 week with Marcus. Maybe like on the anniversary of Jesse Owens' birth or death, whichever's closest. But like that to me still is one of the greatest moments in sports history. Yeah. With Jesse Owens basically rolled up on some dudes, like Hitler really created that or wanted that Olympics to be the epitome of the white Superman, you know, the Nazi ideal. And Jesse Owens basically came in and was like, you mad dog? And like, you know what I'm saying? Just like smashed his whole dreams right in front of his face. Yeah.
Man, if that happened in this day and age, the memes would be priceless. I'm sure there's already memes on there, but just the frenzy of it happening in the moment.
Yeah, I want to see like a meme with Jesse Owens with a gold medal and Hitler looking mad with like, you mad, bro?
I want to see what Black Twitter would do with this.
Oh, Black Twitter would go ham. So you got, that's how crazy it is. I already forgot your schools.
I blew your mind so much. Did I put a killing curse on you?
You got Hogwarts?
I've got Hogwarts, McKinley High School, and Degrassi.
Okay.
Is it that hard to remember?
I'm not. That's probably why I forgot, because I was trying to erase that Hogwarts out of my mind. So no love to Hogwarts.
You don't know. I may have put a charm on you.
I mean, McKinley gets props. Those are solid schools. Degrassi.
Never watch it.
I watched Degrassi, but the crazy thing is I watched Degrassi, and I don't even want to sound like one of those hipsters, but like literally I watched Degrassi before it was cool. Like I watched Degrassi back in like on PBS like in the late 80s when it was Degrassi Junior High.
Yeah.
And then it was Degrassi like in the 90s. Mm-hmm. So like I I was watching Degrassi Junior High back when I was watching, like, You Can't Do That on Television. And, like, those are my Canadian shows, even though I didn't even know they was Canadian back then. I was just like, look at these crazy white people. They are so amusing and entertaining. But, yeah, like, I didn't know. It's crazy because Degrassi became, like, a big thing, I guess, maybe in the mid-90s, maybe late 90s.
Yeah.
And it was like, I'm like, I was watching Degrassi back in 89. So, like, I get it. Like, I understand it. But it's like, my Degrassi will always be, like, Degrassi Junior High. Like, I never graduated with them dudes. I stayed in junior high.
Yeah, I knew they had a Degrassi the Next Generation, and that's what got really over, right?
I don't want nothing to do with Degrassi the Next Generation.
Oh, so is that when they peaked and jumped the shark?
Like, to me, like, because it was Degrassi Junior High, then it was Degrassi, then it was Degrassi the Next Generation. I never saw any of the Next Generation. I saw maybe a little bit about Degrassi, but, like, to me, it was all about Degrassi Junior High. So, it was like, any of those other kids, like, if Drake hadn't come from that show, I would never even really heard of Degrassi.
Right.
So, those are solid schools. But now, prepare to be amazed by some real schools and universities.
Lay it on me.
My first school is a school that I don't know if I want to attend, but, I mean, because it was kind of dangerous, but it was always exciting. There was never a dull moment at this school. And it was a school, in New Jersey with a principal named Joe Clark. And all I want to say is, Fair East Side, by that side we'll stand and always praise thy name. Praise thy name, praise thy name. East Side High with Joe Clark, a.k.a. Morgan Freeman, from the movie Lean On Me. This school was one of the worst schools and one of the worst districts in New Jersey. There was gang violence, there was drugs, there was teenage pregnancies, there was racial incidents. And Joe Clark came in and straightened the school out with his unorthodox methods. And it was crazy that there was a lot of shady stuff. Like, Joe Clark actually told a kid to jump off the roof of a building. The principal did that because the kid was on drugs, and he was like, "Joe, Mr. Clark, I don't want to live no more." And instead of being like, "Hey, kid, you got a lot to live for," Joe Clark was like, "Well, why don't you jump? You're wasting space anyway." That's what Joe Clark did. So I could have attended East Side High for like a semester just to get the flavor, hang out with Kid Ray, holler at some of them girls. And then after that, I'm out because it's too violent for me. I'm not a violent person.
Or assuming you didn't jump off of the cliff of a high school.
No, I wouldn't do that. Especially not a
Do you think you would have jumped? If Morgan Freeman told you to jump with that voice, you wouldn't do it? I'm not sure I wouldn't do it.
It depends. Is it Joe Clark Morgan Freeman, or is it Bruce Almighty God Morgan Freeman?
Morgan Freeman, I was always convinced he was God in real life. I don't think he was playing God.
If it's God Morgan Freeman, I'll do it. Cause I mean, he'd just catch me, you know. But Joe Clark, oh, he got a megaphone. You can't really catch nobody with a megaphone.
Now, let me just throw this at you real quick. What if he started narrating how the jump would go down? You wouldn't feel compelled to just do it because he's saying, like, you're going to get on the stage and you're going to turn around. You know, and he starts saying it with that voice. I think it would, you'd fall under his spell.
You can either get busy living or get busy dying. Either way, you got to jump. Morgan Freeman. I like Morgan Freeman, even though some people, like, don't like Morgan because of what he, like, the relationship he's in with his step-granddaughter. I still like Morgan Freeman. Like, I don't know how I feel about that, like, because she's not really his daughter or his granddaughter.
Yeah, time has forgiven him for that, but that was kind of a creepy episode for Morgan Freeman. You know he's got a fake hand, too, right?
A fake hand?
Yeah, he was on Piers Morgan. He was talking about it. I think it was a plane crash. And it just filled up, and he has a fake, he's a fake hand now.
Like, Chubbs from Happy Gilmore?
Yes, yes, just like that.
Oh, wow. Wow. This is what you guys get when Marcus isn't around. We divulge into tangents about Morgan Freeman's fake hand.
The fact that I didn't make a masturbation joke shows how much the show's grown.
Yeah, you've matured, Alfred. So, yeah, number one is East Side High. Number two, we go to the world of television. All I got to say is, let's go Bayside. I'm talking about Bayside High for Saved by the Bell. Everybody knows this is probably one of the most famous high schools in TV, in movies, in pop culture. You got all your favorite students. Zach Morris, A.C. Slater, Kelly Kapowski, Screech, Lisa Turtle, Jesse, Principal Belding, who for some reason still hangs out at WWE shows as a creepy 60-year-old man. But I would love to be a student at Bayside High because it was always seemed like there was a party. They were always winning, whether it was wrestling tournaments, the football games, the odd volleyball tournament that would show up. And your classmates were so much fun. Like, even people that weren't tied into the main group of students, they seemed to have fun. You know, whether it was it Screech? His girlfriend was played by Tori Spelling, and she had, like, those nerds that would hang around, like, the little group of nerds. You had, like, Slater's group of jock friends, Zach's trendy friends. Like, there was all these little cliques, but they all seemed to get along. There wasn't really a lot of beef going on at Bayside High, you know, as opposed to Eastside, where it was nothing but beef. So I like Bayside High. And, you know, just for the fact that I would probably get in trouble, though, because I would have been like, if I was at Bayside High, like if Nate was the new student, like on a very special episode of Saved by the Bell, like the new student, Nate moves into town. First 5 minutes of the show, I'm knocking Screech out and going to lunch with Lisa Turtle. That's a wrap right there. So I don't know if they would have liked me at Bayside High. But that's okay. So that's Bayside High. That's my second choice. My final choice for what high school, college, university I want to attend, we mentioned it earlier, From a Different World. See, there is a method to the madness, listeners out there. I know it seemed like we was going on a tangent earlier, but Hillman College, which made infrequent appearances on The Cosby Show, but most people knew it on A Different World. It aired on NBC from 1987 to 1993. Like I mentioned, it was originally a vehicle for Lisa Bonet because she had got on Bill Cosby's nerves, and he was like, go ahead and get your own show and get out of my hair. But not only was Lisa Bonet on the show, but the first season of A Different World, which was so much different from the rest of the seasons, featured Marissa Tomei as one of the students in Hillman College. And she was like, it was Denise Huxtable, which was Lisa Bonet, Marissa Tomei, who was Maggie, and Jaleesa, who is Dawn something or other, the dark-skinned chick, for those of you who remember the show. They were roommates. And so it was like you had this older chick that was Dawn, that was Jaleesa. You had Lisa Bonet, and then you had this crazy, kooky white chick named Maggie. And I would, as bad as I would have done at Bayside, I would have probably done worse than Hillman. Because I would have been trying to holler at people the whole time.
Yeah.
But Hillman was a great look for a lot of people into the world of historically black college and universities that had never even seen him before. Because even though it was a fictional account, there were a lot of real aspects to Hillman College. And, you know, so many great characters. Whitley Gilbert, Dwayne Wayne, Walter played by Sinbad. Like, anytime you got Sinbad on the show, it's going to be hot. You had Major Turner on the show, the ROTC chief. You had Mr. Gaines working at the campus snack shop. So it was, Hillman College was really cool because it was like this black experience, but you didn't have to be black to appreciate A Different World. You didn't have to be black to appreciate Hillman College. And it was like it served the dual purpose of encouraging African-American men and women, boys and girls, to aspire to go to a HBCU, but it also showed the Caucasian viewers out there that, you know, ain't nothing wrong with a black college. It's not this big, scary thing. It's not Malcolm State University out there. You know, it's the same as any other college. It's just that most of the students are black. So, you know, if I could have gone anywhere in fiction or even in real life, like if Hillman College was a real life school, I would have wanted to go to Hillman just because it seemed like that's where you can get not only the education in the classroom, but also the education in life. So I got Hillman College Bayside High School, and Eastside High. What you think about that, Big Nasty?
I like the list. A lot of conviction in your explanations. And we're both biased towards schools from shows that we watch, from movies we watch. But let's take it in the context of this list. If you were to go to a school, you mean to tell me you would pass up an opportunity to go learn magic? Do you know what kind of doors that would open?
Do you know what kind of magic? Hold on. Do you know what kind of magic I could have did with Denise Huxtable?
Well, if you actually knew magic, that would be some crazy ass. That's just a freaky magic right there.
Forget the wand. I got the magic stick.
You don't know about those adult Harry Potter spells. I'll tell you about that off camera.
Now, Harry Potter used to trip me out, though, because, like, in the movies, you're the expert, so maybe I'm wrong, but there was only, like, one black kid in the whole school.
Yeah, and he
and was you got all these white kids with magic. That scares me.
Yeah, well, we need to even the odds. That's more incentive for us to go there, so we can, you know, take back the revolution. I'd learn that magic and start the revolution right now.
Yeah. No, I'm picking Hillman College all day over Hogwarts, man. All
right.
The worst that can happen to me at Hillman College is I get hazed while trying to pledge Kappa Lambda Nu fraternity. The worst that could happen to me at Hogwarts is some little angry white kid. Malfoy yeah. Turned me into a frog or a bat or something.
Or you could die, or there could be an attack.
Yeah, or I could
constantly
die.
Under attack. If this was real life, that school would be shut down the first year, given how many times it's been under attack.
Like, we don't even know what happened to Nate. He died in a Quidditch accident, Miss Milton. Yeah. So yeah, I don't trust Hogwarts, man. I would rather take my chances with Joe Clark jumping off the side of the building than Gandalf at Hogwarts.
Well, that's. I don't want to spoil it for you. I was going to tie that into something that happened, but I know you're going to get into Harry Potter, so I will not spoil it for you.
Yeah, we can talk about that once I read the book and watch the movie 5 years from now.
5 years from now.
Wow. And it's a slow build, brother. Slow build. But we did have feedback from the listeners. And you can leave feedback each and every week on Twitter, KOS_POD, or on Facebook, facebook.com/KingsOfSport. You got that feedback up, Brother Alfred?
I do. Let's start with Jamie Robinson, Mission College, G5G. That's what we want to be. Dean, Big Brother, Almighty. Steve Kassan, Bayside. No, I didn't.
You never saw School Days?
Several references to it. I hear it's really good.
Yeah, School Days is another good look at HBCU from the perspective of Spike Lee, and it stars Lawrence Fishburne, and I think he might have still been going by Larry back then. Yeah. Larry Fishburne and what's her name? Gina from Martin, Tisha Campbell. Yes. So yeah, if you got time, if you got Netflix, check out School Days.
For sure. It's probably one of the five Spike Lee movies I haven't seen, but I've seen most of them. So
you definitely. You telling me you saw Girl 6 in High School Days?
Yeah, what's wrong with Girl 6? It's best work, but it's Spike Lee, for God's sakes.
The only thing I liked about Girl 6 was Prince that did the theme song. That's about it.
Did you ever see Bamboozled? It had a pretty good cast, to be honest.
Yeah, Smith,
Damon Wayans, Rappaport, and it had a really good message. Mos Def was in it. I can't remember the time. It was time to time that Davidson was in it, but then the tap dancer was
Damon Wayans. Funny.
Yeah, Damon Wayans and Paul Mooney, I think, played his dad.
Yeah.
Which is funny because Paul Mooney came up with the Homie the Clown character for Damon Wayans.
Yeah. I like Bamboozled. Like, I think it was sometimes Spike had a problem, especially in the 90s and the early 2000s, of like being too preachy. And I think sometimes being preachy is good in terms of getting the message across, but it also, you alienate a larger audience. And so I think that's why movies like Bamboozled didn't really hit in terms of a mainstream appeal, but I thought it was a good movie.
Yeah, it was very preachy, but yeah, very good movie. And it changed the way really as how I viewed black television. It wasn't as easy for me to laugh at black television. Probably what got me into the Boondocks.
You were never able to watch Homeboys in Outer Space the same way.
I was not. Not with a straight face.
Tie-in, though, Homeboys from Outer Space did star, I think his name is Daryl Bell, that played Ron Johnson on A Different World.
Oh.
So, yeah, I'm going to look that up right quick while you finish up the listener feedback.
Let's finish up with Steve Kassan. Bayside, go Tigers, poke high if I got to play on the offensive line along with Al Bundy. Damn, there goes another Al Bundy reference. I think they're trying to tell us something.
Al Bundy was a solid character, man.
He once scored 4 touchdowns in a game.
Yeah. And he didn't marry too bad either.
No.
I mean, she was lazy, but nice to look at. But, okay, so you remember Different World, right?
I've
looked up the guy's name is Daryl M. Bell. You remember Ron Johnson?
Yeah, vaguely, but you know, I know of him.
Ron Johnson, Wayne's light skinned friend that was always getting him into trouble. This dude is 50 years old, son.
Oh my God.
Daryl Bell is 50 years. Daryl M. Bell is an American actor, best known for his role. Oh, okay. As brother X-Ray Vision in the 1988 Spike Lee film School Days, and as Ron Johnson on the NBC sitcom A Different World. So that's a tie-in to both Brother Jamie's answer and my answer. But yeah, Daryl Bell is 50 years old, so shout out to old-ass Daryl Bell.
That's crazy. 50's the new 30.
Yeah, 50's the new 30. Oh, yeah. So that is the list, for this week. Again, thanks for all the answers, all the feedback, if you will. I think that's going to be it for this week, man, because we're getting silly.
Let's put a bow on it before a crack cocaine mention makes it onto the show.
Yeah.
And that didn't count.
I was trying to think of some way to make a reference. Right quick, they would tie in, but I can't think of one.
So. Good. See, it's destined not to happen.
I mean, but if I was at East Side High, though, there'd probably be lots of mentions.
You know, for that matter, if you're at Bayside High, come on, let's be honest. These rich, affluent kids.
No, they're snorting cocaine. It's different. It's different.
Oh, it's, you know, keep making that.
You only get 2 years for powder, 4 years for the rock.
Is cocaine considered a gateway drug to where you can potentially go into crack cocaine if you're not careful?
I don't think cocaine is the gateway. I think when you get the cocaine, you through the gate.
Really? You can party. Not that I have. You can party with that stuff.
If cocaine is the gateway drug, then you already in trouble. You're like, oh, but I just do a little bit of cocaine every now and then.
Well, I don't know. As crazy as that sounds, people do live that way.
And you guys want me to come out to L.A. for TNA, man.
Yes, we got to corrupt you in L.A. We have to.
Yeah, I don't know about all that, man.
I've got my coke guy on speed dial. We're going to have a party.
Wasn't there an episode of, I'm surprised nobody mentioned, was it Valley High in 90210? What was the name of that school?
Wasn't it just West, Beverly Hills?
West Beverly.
West Beverly High, yeah.
Yeah, John Pollock would have known that. Shout out to John Pollock and Wei Tang. But yeah, West Beverly. I'm surprised nobody mentioned Beverly Hills 90210 in this topic.
Yeah, and that show was just a tad. I just missed it. It was like a tad before my time. Like as before my time as it gets. And then my time came.
I never really was a fan. My sister liked it, but it was a decent show with good looking 30-year-olds playing high school students.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Shannon Doherty and what's the chick? And Gabrielle.
Luke Perry was on that, right?
Yeah, it was Luke Perry, Ian Ziering, Tori Spelling, Gabrielle Carteris, Shannon Doherty, Jenny Garth, Jason Priestley, and the two old people that really were only 5 years older than Jason Priestley paying his parents. Oh, yeah, but yeah, we'll end it there because, I mean, Shannon Doherty is one crazy person, but as a teaser for next week, I'm like, I never give out homework on this show, but my assignment to you, Brother Alfred, before we record the next show, and yes. I'm going to tell Marcus next time I see him, y'all need to watch Catch Up on the Ultimate Fighter.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's when, again, me and Marcus, Nate won't let us talk about it, but we watch Big Brother, so when we're not recording, we go back and forth, we exchange notes and what we think about Big Brother. But that show has ended. It was a good season, the most controversial season ever, and so now I'm dedicated to watching The Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah, I'm telling you, like, the fights are okay, but the real action is between Ronda Rousey and Miesha Tate, and, like, I came into the show, like, liking Ronda and disliking Miesha, and now, like, Ronda is so crazy that not only does she make Miesha look like a baby face, which is hard to do, but I think she makes me like her more, even more. So, because I dig crazy chicks. That is my problem.
It's not a problem.
I was going to say something, but I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to end the show because we could get into a whole.
Oh, I know. Oh, yeah. I know we could.
Yeah. So that's going to be it for this week. Before we get out of here, Alfred, let the people know where they can find you.
Follow the one man brand at This Is Nasty on Twitter and go on Bleacher Report, watch the videos and read the articles.
And you can also follow, Brother Lightskin, Marcus Vandenberg, at Marco Will, MarcoWill on Twitter, and I believe Instagram, but I haven't been on there lately, or at all. Cause, I guess, can you only get Instagram through a phone? I mean, I don't know. I'm like,
I don't have Instagram. That's where I draw the line in social media.
Like, cause I've got it on my iTunes. I guess you can download it through iTunes, but it only works for like the iPad or your iPhone. Like I'm still like a generation behind technology wise. Like I'm still rocking the iPod Nano Generation 5. Like it just came out. Like for real. Like I just transitioned from a Discman to an iPod 3 years ago. So for real.
Wow, that is really behind.
Yeah. Like for real, I just gave up the PlayStation 2 2 years ago, man. I hold up. When I find some technology I like, I stick with it.
Did you have like an iRock before that?
No, before I had the, I'm gonna tell you, before I had the Discman, I had the Sun. I was listening to a Walkman up until like 2003. Like the Walkman with the tape player.
Did they still have those in 2003?
Yes, because I mean,
you were using the same one.
I was using the same one, but it also had like the little switch, which was hot because you could go from the tape to the AM/FM.
Yeah,
I could listen to all my radio stations, all my sports, because that was back when terrestrial radio was kind of good. So then, in 2003, I switched to the Discman, and I rocked the Discman all the way up till about 2010, and then I was like, all right, old friend. Time to go to that new technology that's been out for 5 years already. And I hopped on the iPod.
Well, you're catching up. You're catching up. You're on your way.
Hey, I'm doing this show now on a MacBook Pro. Like I'm making my way into the 20th century.
And with iPod, you know how Apple does. They don't really upgrade anything. They just give you a lot of bells and whistles like, hey, this one turns green. Buy it for $5,000. And so you're not really missing out on the next generation stuff.
I mean, if like all the iPods anyway, like the new ones, they're making them smaller and less sturdy anyway.
Yes.
Like I'm the type of person, like I listen to my iPod everywhere. Like if I'm going to work, if I'm jogging, if I'm, you know, out in the back, having a drink and having a cigar or something. So like I'm pretty hard on my electronics. So I need electronics that can roll with me. So I don't need this fancy 2013 technology that's what do they call it? The inefficient design that's made to break down so I can send Steve Jobs' widow more money.
Oh, it really is made to break down. I've never had an iPod that lasted more than 3 years. And it's always just turns it off and that's it. That's all she wrote.
And it's just a picture of Steve Jobs popping up like, sorry.
Where his time is up.
Wearing his black turtleneck. Oh, rest in peace, Steve Jobs.
I was going to say, we got to at least throw that in there.
Yeah, I mean, because for real, like, without Steve, we wouldn't be doing this show right now.
R.I.P. Ashton.
I haven't even seen that movie, man. I don't want to see Ashton Kutcher playing Steve Jobs, man.
You and millions of others.
And I mean, like, I know, like, people are all about Ashton Kutcher now because he did that speech that was really cool. But, like, I'm not forgetting all the bad stuff Ashton Kutcher's done. like, just one good speech does not make up for the butterfly effect?
Yeah, he's very similar to Ben
Affleck.
One
good speech does not make up for 2.5 men the last 3 years.
Yeah.
One good speech does not make up for ruining and breaking poor Demi Moore's old heart.
Well, you had to know that was going to happen.
Her old googly heart. It's all right, Demi. Come on, get down with the king.
And on that note.
And on that note. We going to call it a show. Again, shout out to TJ McClune that came through. Shout out to Marcus, wherever you are tonight, brother. Shout out to you guys for listening. Shout out to Dork Trek. By the time you hear this, our good friend Bobby France is relaunching his podcast, Dork Trek, which is a show-by-show breakdown of Star Trek The Next Generation and some of the Star Trek movies. Great, funny podcast. Not only is Bobby on there, but Dennis Black and Asian, who has co-hosted the show with me and Alfred before. Dennis Black and Asian is on that show. So check them out on Twitter, at Dork Trek, and look up Dork Trek on Facebook. So shout out to those cats. Shout out to you guys again for listening. Shout out to Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com. Shout out to Audible, audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. And shout out to Dead Steve Jobs. We appreciate you, brother. Why couldn't it have been Bill Gates?
Wow. Any other bridges you'd like to burn tonight?
No, I think I'm good. I think I'm good. And it's, I got God on my side, and he talks like Morgan Freeman. you believe in wizards, I believe in Morgan Freeman.
Well, there you go. Different strokes for different folks.
Yeah, yeah. One day we'll have to do a show about Different Strokes and talk about that episode where they had the dude in the bike shop sexually harass Arnold and Dudley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the Family Guy take on that. Scream real loud on my ass.
Oh, yeah. This is what happened, guys, when Mark is in the round. This is what happened. When the light-skinned cat's away, the dark-skinned mice will play. That's the way the old saying goes. So that's going to be it. Check us out on iTunes, Stitcher Radio. Like us, subscribe, rate, review, share us with your friends, all that good stuff. And we'll be back next week with another fun-filled edition of the Kings of Sport. So, for Big Nasty Alpha Cunningham, for Marcus Vandenberg, I am the Godfather Nate Milton, and you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's X.